create what he refers to as, using Karl Rove's words, a permanent Republican majority. That is referred to in other countries as single-party rule.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
That's what you have, you know, with Mr. Gaddafi. You have single-party rule. It's what you have in Egypt, Saudi Arabia. It's what you have in the Soviet Union, single-party rule. And that's what these guys are trying to create.
Tom Hartman, weekday mornings 10 to noon on KRXA 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Tom Foti. 172 arrests in Saudi Arabia. The reason? An alleged major terrorist plot against the oil-rich kingdom. The Associated Press quotes the Saudi Interior Ministry as saying the planning was nearly complete. From Dubai, reporter Phil Moore.
My police sources tell me that they've been watching certain groups for some considerable period of time. There have been a number of successes catching Al-Qaeda-linked militants in Saudi Arabia over the last couple of years. It seems that the cells were busted in a variety of places throughout the kingdom.
Terrorism expert Dr. Neil Livingston on what this might have been all about.
It would appear, given the fact that they were well-financed, that they had aviation skills, also explosive skills, that they were going to carry out some massive type of operation.
The Saudi Interior Ministry lists oil fields and prisons as potential targets for the alleged terrorists. He is known as al-Iraqi, and the Pentagon says Abdul al-Hadi al-Iraqi spent most of the last decade and a half not in Iraq but in Afghanistan as an al-Qaeda recruiter and trainer. The Pentagon says he is now being held at Guantanamo Bay, suspected of plotting attacks on U.S. forces in Afghanistan from across the border in Pakistan. No way, no how, is President Bush bending on that Iraq funding bill narrowly passed by Congress, one that also calls for deadlines for pulling U.S. troops out.
If the Congress wants to test my will as to whether I'll accept a timetable withdrawal, I won't accept one. I just don't think it's in the interest of our troops.
The president has invited congressional leaders to the White House to discuss what is next in terms of Iraq funding. The president's comments came at Camp David, where he's been discussing another world hotspot, North Korea, with the visiting prime minister of Japan. The House Oversight Committee wants documents from the Pentagon and the White House on the friendly fire death of Pat Tillman, the ex-NFL star shot to death while on duty with the Army Rangers in Afghanistan. Committee member Mike Honda of California spoke to KCBS Radio San Francisco.
There's one thing that the Tillman family would want, and that's the unvarnished truth. They want to know who said what, when, and how high did it go.
The White House has said that from all indications, President Bush didn't learn the truth about Tillman's death until well after his funeral. The first 3 months of the year showed economic growth, but not much of it. The slowest quarterly growth in 4 years, 1.3%. The big reason? A slump in housing sales. Peter Capelli is an economics professor at the Wharton School of Business.
I think everybody expected the housing numbers to be bad. We've seen some preliminary indications that they were going to be way down this quarter. So I think everybody was just waiting for those numbers to show up, and here they are.
On Wall Street, a very slow end to a very active week. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 15.5 points at 13,120. The NASDAQ index was up 2.75 or 11%. The Standard & Poor's index actually showed a drop. This is CBS News.
The following is an OnStar conversation.
OnStar Center, this is Dolores. May I assist you?
Somebody just stole my truck.
I'm sorry, that happened to you. Call the police?
Police are standing right in my living room. Now, how does it work? Do you guys call the police to say you've located it?
Yes, and we will call you and let you know. I'm going to begin searching for your vehicle right now. Do you have the VIN number?
3G Light Golf.
If your vehicle is stolen, OnStar can work with authorities to help them locate it.
This is Kelly.
Hello, this is Dolores of OnStar. I just wanted to let you know that we have located the vehicle.
That is awesome. OnStar rocks.
We appreciate you saying that. That's what that makes our day. It really
does. Thank you, Dolores.
You are quite welcome.
Stolen vehicle location assistance is just one of many OnStar services available on over 50 GM models. The first year of OnStar service is included on new OnStar-equipped GM vehicles. To experience OnStar, press your blue button or visit OnStar.com. OnStar by GM.
More than 700 firefighters continue to battle wildfires in southeastern Georgia. Susan Reich is with the Georgia Forestry Commission.
61,246 acres have burned. The fire stands at 50% contained.
No word on when full containment might be reached. Want to become a fortune teller? If you want to charge for your services, you'd rather not be in Philadelphia. Authorities there trying to foretell the futures of professional fortune tellers. KYW's Hadass Kuznets explains.
Dominic Verdi with Licenses and Inspections says a law prohibiting fortune telling businesses in Pennsylvania has been in effect for decades but never enforced. But he says this week over a dozen businesses were shut down after LNI received complaints from the Philadelphia Police Department.
A psychic reading is illegal according to the Pennsylvania Crimes Code Act.
Now that fortune tellers are on their radar, LNI is going after them.
To this date, 16 locations have been closed.
And how many fortune tellers are there in Philadelphia? There's a lot more than 16, I'm guessing.
Your guess is as good as mine. We're finding out as the days go on.
I'm Tom Foti, CBS News.
Hello?
Awful night.
Beth?
My erosive acid reflux.
Haven't you heard of Protonix Pantoprazole Sodium?
What?
Protonix. One daily tablet helped control daytime, even nighttime acid reflux symptoms.
Nighttime symptoms, too?
Yep, even helped repair acid reflux damage. Plus, I save on my Protonix prescription.
Think I could save on my copay?
Check your health plan.
Right. Gotta go.
Where?
To see my doctor about Protonix.
Protonix copays are not less than generic drugs. Prescription Protonix heals acid-related erosions in the esophagus and relieves associated frequent and persistent heartburn. Most patients heal within 8 weeks. Your results may vary. Doctors may prescribe Protonix longer to maintain healing. Studies lasted 12 months. Other serious stomach conditions may still exist. In studies, the most common side effects were headache, diarrhea, and gas. Go to ProtonixSavings.com or call 866-794-ACID to learn more about Protonix, acid reflux disease, and savings. See our ad in the Saturday Evening Post. Ask your doctor if Protonix is right for you.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to this edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm your humble host, Peter B. We've got a lot to talk about. And I hope you'll listen and call in toll-free. Our interactive program welcomes your calls at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You can always email me, Peter, at peterbcollins.com. Or if you take exception to one of my remarks, how about loudmouth at peterbcollins.com? It'll reach me. One of our goals on this program is to present views and voices that you don't hear in the mainstream media. And we also make a point of inviting people on the program who are smarter than I am and know more than I do. And I'm delighted to spend this hour with journalist Al J. Venter. His new book is called Allah's Bomb, The Islamic Quest for Nuclear Weapons. Al Venter, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Peter, good to talk to you again.
Well, it's my pleasure, sir, and you have completed or fulfilled something that I have been seeking for a long time, because I've been fascinated by a figure named A.Q. Khan, or Han, as it's pronounced.
Khan, yeah, well, we keep the old
We can anglicize all of this,
yeah.
And I have trouble with some of the Pakistani names and all that, so we'll do our best. But A.Q. Khan is a fascinating figure. He is the father of the Pakistani nuclear bomb, the nuclear weapons program there, and he is widely regarded as one of the worst proliferators of nuclear technology, expertise, and even raw materials for nations that are seeking to join the nuclear club.
Well, he's actually more than that, Peter, and but for A.Q. Khan, we wouldn't have the nuclear problem that we've got today in Iran. It's a situation that's been allowed to develop over many years, and it involves something in the region of about $8 or $10 billion. That's a figure that was bandied about. I go into this in quite a lot of detail in the book.
Yes, you do.
And it is a figure that was bandied about by the Pakistani intelligence organization, saying there's no limit to the amount of money we can ask if we give them a help. And this is something that happened in the late 90s already.
Yeah.
So he's helped them. There's been a tremendous amount of interplay between North Korea, Iran, and Pakistan, to the extent that they all three use the same missile, different names. In North Korea, it's called the Nodong. It's got a different name, Shahib, in Iran, and
right.
the Gowri in Pakistan. Same missile. And if my argument along the way is that if all this interplay has been allowed to take place and there's been an exchange of nuclear information between North Korea and Pakistan, then it's logic, it's axiomatic that Iran has been given the same information. And I'll go so far as to put my head on a block and say I'm pretty damn sure that the Iranians have got something like the bomb at the moment, and they just don't know how to use it.
You think they're much further along than the Western reports indicate?
Why not? If Pakistan can do it, and North Korea can do it, and we're dealing with an Iranian nation, with a proud historical history, and we've all had dealings these days with Iranian academics. We talked about this last time. Industrialists, entrepreneurs, these are very clever people. There's absolutely no reason why they shouldn't have progressed to the point.
Now, that's different, though, from an assertion that they actually have it.
Well, I get that feeling. I can't prove anything.
The
CIA.
But wouldn't Ahmadinejad be bragging about it just to blow
no,
past all the bluster?
No, it's a huge embarrassment. I don't think they know what to do with it. Why do you think that one of the things that has come out is the release of the British hostages?
Right.
Just at this moment in time, the last thing they needed was an additional problem that became embarrassing. They could have rubbed London's nose in the dirt endlessly. They could have done exactly the same to those 15 hostages as they did to the American hostages a generation ago. But they didn't. They let them go without a quirk. They don't want anything to interfere with something that's happening now, and we don't know what it is. Something is going on. Something, you know, they're far too cocky just to be to have something.
So what should we believe, though, Al? Because we hear these claims from Ahmadinejad that they've advanced by tenfold, and then El-Baradei and the other experts tell us that, oh, that's an exaggeration. They can't get their centrifuges to run and to synchronize
properly.
Well,
Baradei made exactly the same statement that before Pakistan exploded its five atom bombs, and he also had a hell of a lot to say before the North Korean exploded their atom bomb. Secondly, there were two atom bomb tests in Pakistan some years ago in that northeast desert. The one was held in a great publicity event to let the world know that they had the bomb. The other one was in total secrecy. Nobody knew. All they knew was that they picked up traces of a nuclear explosion. This is roughly about the same time, but not the same time. And there's no the reason that is now being put forward is that the second tests were not a Pakistani bomb at all. The consensus amongst those that have studied the matter, and this includes global security, John Pike and Charles Fick, is that it could have been the first test of the North Korean bomb. And secondly, we had the test the other day of the North Korean bomb, but it was below par. It was a half a kiloton, which is very unusual. But that could, and it has been put forward by certain authorities, that could have been a testing for the trigger device of a thermonuclear bomb, which brings us to another threshold of nuclear capability altogether, because it's a very different matter building an atom bomb with a power of about 18-20 kilotons, roughly what took out Nagasaki and Hiroshima, compared to a thermonuclear, never mind cities.
So if you have this well-placed suspicion that Iran has already developed some sort of a weapon, even a crude one, what do you think is the likely approach for the international community? We have these rounds of U.N. sanctions. There has been a lot of finger-pointing. But do you think ultimately somebody is going to have to take them out?
Well, this is a several-phased question. But in the first place, there's nothing we can do about it. Iran, you can threaten and you can jump and shout and scream as much as... He then set up... Pakistan, most favored nation, he was able to make contact all over the place. And over the years with Urenka, he worked with a lot of people, and quite a few of his contacts then ended up working for him. There's a lot of money being thrown around. it was a very attractive option. The same way that Saddam Hussein, as we found out after the first invasion under Colin Powell, had employed Germans and others to try to build his nuclear weapons program.
And Pakistan's urge was to develop parity with India.
They'd taken a terrible beating in one of their wars, and this was a huge humiliation for the Pakistani nation.
Right.
And AQ Khan wanted to put that right. And one way to do it was to gain parity on a nuclear level, which he achieved. And he built up these connections with a headquarters in Dubai, a sort of a clearinghouse. He had British people involved there. His agents would go out and they'd buy all the things that were necessary. And Ashraf Ghani, the man in Cape Town, the former Israeli Defense Force major, who actually used to read the Torah at the local Seapoint synagogue, was recruited. Now, we don't know how this was done, but my goodness, for somebody to be recruited by an Islamist into something that was quite obviously had use, never mind dual use, it had application against Israel. It was done very successfully. And one of the things, we don't know how many items he acquired, but we do know that he tried to buy 200 triggered spark caps, which have a dual use purpose. They are used medically to pulverize kidney stones, but they're also used to set off nuclear weapons, atomic bombs. And the order went out to Elmer Perkins, an American company, and at about this stage, he had drawn a lot of attention because he was making huge money. This was one of many shipments that have been sent through to South Africa. Now South Africa is a new rainbow nation, all in the clear, everything's rosy, and it was immediately transshipped to Dubai, everything. And he somehow persuaded to come and take a vacation in the United States, and they grabbed him when he got off the plane in Denver. Well, he's told the Americans everything. He got a pretty lean sentence, and I think because of the cooperation. And then we find out another operation involving AQ Khan was the building of a uranium enrichment plant at a factory outside Johannesburg, which was to the point where it was packed into 11 containers and ready to be shipped as a water purifying plant through Mozambique to Dubai. This is quite remarkable. Up to now, governments are involved in these things. Yet here we have a commercial company with specifications from Pakistan to build a uranium enrichment plant intended for Libya. And that's where the wheels came off, because if you remember, Gaddafi was caught with a consignment of centrifuges on a ship.
Right.
And I gather that he was told, you either tell us what everything or else we'll send the Marines in. It'll take about an afternoon to clean that lot up. Everybody denies that, of course. You don't want to, rub the man up the wrong way, but that's what happened. And
all right, let's pause here, Al. It's time for a break, and we'll pick up there after the break. Al Venter is our guest, Al J. Venter, because we honor middle initials here at the Peter B. Collins Show. And his new book is powerful and detailed and well-sourced with a wider range of sources. Allah's Bomb, it's called, The Islamic Quest for Nuclear Weapons. More in a moment, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
I'm Todd, the taxi driver, and today I'd like to talk about the dismissal of Judge Angel Velasquez. A judicial review committee found the judge guilty of 7 counts of willful misconduct. Specific charges include violating the probation of defendants who appeared before him without an attorney, threatening to increase jail time to defendants that ask legitimate questions, making disparaging comments about attorneys, and improperly issuing bench warrants. What I find most interesting is the response from different members of the community when asked about this decision. Several Latino politicians and a Latino defense attorney was interviewed and asked what they felt of the decision. All of the individuals believed the decision was unjust and unfairly harsh. Non-Latino individuals that were asked to comment seemed to support and understand the decision made. I would be interested to find out why opinions fell along racial lines. I'm Todd the taxi driver, and I think this is worth looking into further.
It's Behind the Wheel, the Consumer New Car Review. I'm Peter B. Collins. This week, I've been behind the wheel of the 2007 Chrysler Crossfire. New Car Review. I'm Peter B. Collins. This week, I've been behind the wheel of the 2007 Chrysler Crossfire LTD Roadster. An impressive little...
Hi, this is Hal. I just want to let our internet listeners know we're going to be turning down the stream for a moment. We had some problems before. We apologize for it. We're trying to improve the situation, so if you're listening on the internet, you will lose your connection, but we'll be back up shortly, we hope. Thank you.
And second gear has lots of headroom as you accelerate, but offers less compression braking on hills and back roads. The convertible top resembles the Mercedes SLK system, which is complicated and could require maintenance. My only problem is the snug cockpit where my left shin made contact with the bottom of the dashboard when I shifted. This is common in the small roadsters. By the numbers, the 2007 Chrysler...
I'm pretty sure that Musharraf knows today what went on, but... you mentioned earlier the Pakistani intelligence organization. They definitely have kept him under wraps because the Americans have been trying for years to speak to Khan. And he's the one person in the world that could tell us immediately whether Iran has got the bomb or not, or
yeah.
how far they are developed
mm-hmm.
in that regard, how far they're moving. We come back to this. A unit was built at the factory near Johannesburg for Libya. That trial, the two people involved, two of how many, who knows, is being held in secret. And a lot of money that was being transferred internationally from Libya, we're talking millions per transfer.
And to be specific, this is not only the apartheid government,
but it continued
under Mandela and his successors.
Yes, in the time that they were in the wilderness, there were a lot of Asian South Africans involved with them, and these people made close contacts with Saddam Hussein, with Iran, Libya, the rest of them, which they've maintained over the years. It's been very useful to them.
Mm-hmm. Israel too?
No, Israel. After the Israel has dropped out, they're very, very. South Africa is very anti-Israel.
Mm-hmm.
They barely have diplomatic relations. Mm-hmm. There's still an embassy in Pretoria, but it's rocky.
Right, but when it comes to nuclear issues, did Israel benefit from the South African connection over the years?
I think it was the other way around. Apart from yellow cake, mm-hmm. which South Africa supplied in large amounts, where they did cooperate and did very well was on the missile program. South Africa developed a medium range, a very, very, very sophisticated medium range intercontinental ballistic missile. And the tests they did were accurate to within a couple hundred meters.
Mm.
That stuff was closed down. That entire plant, 600 people, scientists, technicians, was closed down at the behest of Washington after Nelson Mandela took power. And as I think we talked once before, the mullahs were waiting across the road when they walked out of the building.
Yeah.
That entire lot decamped to Iran, and that is a catastrophe.
Mm-hmm.
Because many, not only that, there's other sophisticated weapon systems which have gone there. And as I said, some of these have been picked up in Hezbollah hands.
All right, coming back to Khan and the Pakistani government and the ISI, its equivalent of the CIA.
Yes.
Do we know if Khan was freelancing when he made deals with Iran, Libya, North Korea, or was that sanctioned by the highest levels of the Pakistani government?
I think it began very well under the ISI, probably the intelligence unit, although we don't know to what extent. But then, like all these people, they get greedy. And all sorts of deals were made. When you read through the book, you'll see that the organization, KQ Khan's organization, became so big. He had so many agents that you had individuals competing for the same contract in places like Malaysia, Indonesia, Bahrain, and elsewhere. That the money, there was no object. So obviously, the human element crept in, and that eventually led to the downfall of the system because it became too big. Too many people were getting involved in a program that Al-Baradi, the International Atomic Energy Agency head, said was like a conveyor belt of nuclear equipment. You submitted your shopping list in the morning, and you were told by evening whether what was available, what it would cost, and how long would it take to get it.
That sounds like Amazon.com.
Well, that's, you got the message. Unfortunately, it it got out of hand completely. Now, which brings us to Al-Qaeda. We know that Al-Qaeda, and I deal with this as well, has interest in nuclear matters, but they don't have the industrial infrastructure that they need, not now.
Mm-hmm.
But they were involved. There's a lot of people have been involved in studying nuclear physics. They had their own website, and they had a very sophisticated website, as a matter of fact. Not all of it was true to form. There were a lot of inaccuracies, some mistakes, but some there were people involved that knew what they were talking about, and uranium enrichment was one of them. The detonation of nuclear weapons was another. But the documentation that was picked up after the fall of Afghanistan, hard drives and hard copy were found by the Roomful. And this was analyzed by the Americans, and they know, they have a pretty good idea of what, which direction Al-Qaeda was taking in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
They do have a huge interest. This is their one strength in the radiological bomb, the dirty bomb, as they call it.
But it seems more likely that given the loose security in the former Soviet Union, and Condi Rice slipped the other day and referred to Russia as the Soviet Union.
Yeah. Not difficult.
That, you know, and with the cash that bin Laden has or has access to, wouldn't it be easier for them just to buy, you know, a suitcase nuke or some something that could be used as a dirty bomb that would easily be acquired on the black market?
Yes, it would be. But this brings me back to my old friend, Dr. Nick von Willich, who was on the board of the Board of Governors of the International Atomic Energy Agency. He made the point, and I quote him, that the Iranians are a remarkably patient people. They aren't looking. The game of chess, I believe, originated in the old Persia. And they play six moves ahead. They're not worrying about the bomb that they might detonate in the desert tomorrow or next year or whatever. It's the long-term proposition. They are looking to see the reestablishment of the old dynasty that made them one of the greatest nations the world has ever known. And they're doing it piece by piece. Now, they have got, there's no question, they have got plutonium and highly enriched uranium in quantity over the years from the former Soviet Union and the surrogate states. But they are looking ahead. If they are to become a major nuclear power, they don't need one bomb or six. They need many more. Mm-hmm. Israel is said to have about 200, of which most are thermonuclear. This is a long-term process, and it's not. This is the reason why they are doing what they're doing, and why it's all been done in secret.
Mm-hmm.
We know about Natanz, we know about Iraq, we know about Isfahan. What we don't know are the other 30 or 40 sites. We also know that the Isfahan site is a half a mile underground,
mm-hmm.
under this big city, which is impervious to thermonuclear attack.
Well, and there would be...
You drop a bomb right on top of it, it's going to affect what's going on half a mile down below.
And you'd have massive civilian casualties if you did.
Yeah, and they are banking on this. But you're not dealing with rationality, yeah? This is the initiator, the Iranians, under with Hezbollah as their surrogate, in Lebanon, the initiator of the car bomb concept, which is now widespread. You know, this is not a logical thing. This is, you can't rationalize with people that send 15,000 children into the minefields as they did in the war against Saddam Hussein to clear the minefields that the infantry could follow afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
These people are not rational. Very clever. They are not logic in some of the things they do.
Al Venter, let me zoom out for a moment here and ask about the bigger picture. You cite a report from Dr. Al-Baradei in October of 2006
yes.
that apart from 30-something other countries interested in acquiring nuclear parity, the half-dozen Arab states in the hunt include Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Syria, and Algeria. Touch on each of those, if you could, in, you know, just in passing, about the state of development either of a nuclear capability or other WMD. And then my question is, are we looking at a new Cold War in the Middle East?
We're looking at a nuclear race, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll deal with them quickly because there's quite a lot to say. But Egypt has become thoroughly engrossed in that concept of gaining nuclear parity. It's commissioning huge deals with the Soviet Union, and part of the deal is for its students to be educated at Russian nuclear establishments, academic establishments studying nuclear policy. Saudi Arabia, big question. Are we in a situation where they've got it? The consensus is yes, that they bought them for cash, billions worth of money, from the Pakistanis originally, and they're in silos in a town, which I mentioned in the book, which is about 100 miles south of Riyadh.
Mm-hmm.
Algeria has already had a nuclear weapons program. That was put on hold some years ago, but there's talk, the Spanish intelligence agency have said that that has been activated again. Syria, we don't know. It's a hugely secretive organization, but they have indicated that they would like to gain nuclear parity.
As I recall from the book, you suggest that they have some missiles that are tipped with nerve agents?
Well, yes. This is something we've known about for a long time. The VX and Sarin is something that they have on their southern border with Israel. They use this as a threat against an invasion, and it's quite successful because the Israelis... they could take out most of them, but you only need one of these missiles to drop in a populated area in any Israeli city, and you're going to have fairly substantial casualties. These are deadly nerve gases. They're not to be trifled with.
Mm-hmm.
Syria is the dark horse. It's very close at the moment to Iran. Unfortunately, it works in cohesion, dominating and controlling whatever Hezbollah does and stuff there.
Now, with these issues in mind, what is your best advice to the U.S. in terms of engaging in at least tough diplomatic exchanges with Syria and Iran, or do you believe the Bush administration's freeze-out approach is effective?
I don't think you can do anything. You know, I'm not an admirer of what's going on at the moment in Washington, but I don't think that... That you can do anything with Syria. It's a sort of an intransigent country that marches to the beat of its own drum. It's not a very efficient military country. They lost 98 of their planes the last time they took the air against the Israelis, without the Israelis losing one. I'm going back quite a few years here, but they want back the Heights, Golan, and they could end up doing something stupid. And again, it could be something preemptive. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know enough about it. I was in Damascus a while ago, and unfortunately, I was kept under very close surveillance. So
they have some minders for Al Venter, huh?
As a matter of fact, I had an email returned to me today saying that as a result of all this, that the South African NIA, National Intelligence Agency, what a terrible blunder. They sent back a message, an email, saying that it will be delivered at a later stage. My emails are being monitored by... And I'm living in North America, being monitored by the South African National Intelligence Agency.
Well, I'm sure the NSA. I'm sure the NSA's got a file on you too, Al.
Oh, no question, very big one.
We'll take a break and continue. Powerful book, lots of information that we don't have time to discuss on the air. Pick it up and read it. Allah's Bomb: The Islamic Quest for Nuclear Weapons. We're talking with British journalist Al J. Venter here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
This is Stephanie Miller. You're listening to the station that encourages you to think for yourself. What a concept. AM 540 KRXA.
Join broadcast journalist Glenn Brooks and the Vibrant Living Network every Saturday from 9 to 10 a.m. and 11 to 12 p.m. for conversations that invoke creativity, well-being, and compassion. Named as the most knowledgeable voice in the field of holistic health and positive living, Glenn takes your calls and comments right here on KRXA AM 540.
Join me, Deborah Lindsay, each Sunday afternoon at 2 for Tomorrow Matters. We'll be matching the global problems of today with the local solutions for a better tomorrow. I'll bring in the guests, and you call with the questions and ideas, and collectively we'll set the standards for a more sustainable future, because for all of us, tomorrow matters. Join me right here on KRXA 540 AM for Tomorrow Matters each Sunday at 2.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Mayday, mayday, mayday. Coach, do you know what's special about this Tuesday?
Let me guess, Hal, it's Mayday.
It sure is. It's also the day when Central Avenue Bakery celebrates its grand reopening. From 5 to 7 p.m., stop by 173 Central Avenue in Pacific Grove.
Tina didn't change any of the recipes, did she?
Of course not. The staff's the same, too, and the prices are beyond reasonable. But the setting is even more comfortable and attractive.
Support locally owned and operated businesses, local artists, and KRXA 540 AM. On May 1st, May Day, from 5 to 7 p.m., enjoy the grand reopening of Central Avenue Bakery at the corner of Central Ave and Dewey in PG.
Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. We're talking with British journalist Al J. Venter, 40 years of covering defense issues, and, you know, they spell defense with a C. Allah's Bomb is the new book, The Islamic Quest for Nuclear Weapons. Al Venter, did Muammar Gaddafi in Libya give up their quest to become a member of the nuclear club because the U.S. invaded Iraq?
This is sensitive issue, that one. There's a lot of worry. You know that Iran became very nervous after the second invasion of Iraq, which is why they opened up to the International Atomic Energy Agency. Surprisingly, they admitted to a lot of things, including the fact that they've been busy with nuclear things for almost 20 years. Iran also got very nervous, which after the invasion, they got this ship called the BBC China. Strange name, was intercepted by NATO, a naval task force, and found all the centrifuges found. And I think that there was enough wallop in the American threat to come clean for him to do that. There's no question. He was very nervous. But
Bush has tried to spin it, that the example that we set with Saddam scared the bejesus out of Gaddafi.
No, well, I'm sure it did. It's no question that his entire career of international terrorism came to an abrupt halt. He'd been working in this sort of thing now for 30 years. And he had jolly good reason to stop, because he did think that the Marines were going to go in. Anyhow, at that stage, America could do pretty well much as it pleased. That's not the case anymore.
All right. We're going to take a call. Thomas from Santa Cruz, thanks for checking in. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show with Al Venter.
Yeah, hello, Peter, and hello, Al.
Hi.
Hello there.
I was listening to your conversation with interest and trying to take in what you're saying. But the thing that disturbs me most about the whole situation now is the lack of, seems to me, speaking honestly about American and British foreign policy for the last 40 years, which is a great big cause of why the so-called terrorists hate us and want to attack us. And this lack of honesty seems to me to keep us buried in an ever, never-ending road to hell.
Well, I can't agree with you more, but you must understand, I've been around a little bit longer than you, that foreign policy is war by other means, and it is a succession of lies. Unfortunately, that's the way it's always been. And if you look back in history, you'll find that I'm not talking through my nose. But more important, and you cannot ignore the fact that no matter what America does, no matter what Britain does, there is a huge groundswell of resentment against the West. I have a very good friend who I quote in the book, Stephen Ulf, who gave me all the material on the nuclear web site of Al-Qaeda. And we discussed this very point. And Stephen, who's fluent in Arabic, and he spends a lot of time, he reads, writes it, he's a major authority, and curiously, as a Brit, he's a lecturer at West Point. He made the point that there's a tremendous hatred for everything the West stands for, and it stems primarily from the amount of sexual license that we allow our societies, and right or wrong, you know, I'm not there to judge, but this is the way they perceive it. Yeah. They see us as decadent, rotten, to be destroyed against all the will of Allah.
Thomas, thank you.
I would like to respond to that.
Okay, go ahead quickly, please.
Okay, well, you know, I don't know much about their sexual preferences. I do know some, but not that much about how they really feel about it. But when he says he's been around a lot longer than me, maybe he has, maybe he hasn't. I'm 56, and I've spent the last 4 years deeply studying and reading and watching videos.
Right.
And they don't hate us primarily for our sexual preference. They hate us for the way we've treated them, take advantage of them economically for their resources.
Yeah, you're right in that regard as well.
That's way more than they hate us for sexual, and we're not addressing that. And that's what keeps the hate coming. And when we address that, maybe the hate will stop. And maybe our insane way of trying to club the world into subservience will stop, and maybe then we'll have some peace. So I wish people would quit, stop not addressing this issue, and quit sidetracking it with sexual stuff. Sure,
well,
there's an element of that, but that's not
okay,
the main reason.
Thomas, thank you. You've made your point. Go ahead, Al. Go ahead, Al. We're listening.
Wait, so we've got a couple of minutes, and it's impossible to, you know, this is a subject for debate. It's a serious matter. Our caller is quite right. There are many facets to this thing. It is something that goes far beyond the sex. But the sex thing is, look, the whole Islamic society is dominated by sex. They put their women into purdah, the way they treat them. So let's not limit that aspect either.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's something that needs a much longer time and many, many more points made than the 2 minutes that we have.
Understood. And so with that in mind, let me just jump to my final point. You quote a national intelligence estimate of the United States with this comment. We assess that the Iraq jihad is shaping a new generation of terrorist leaders and operatives. Perceived jihadist success there would inspire more fighters to continue the struggle elsewhere.
We have an example today. The Saudis have foiled an attack on their oil fields, a massive. They brought in 172 tanks. BBC reported on the web.
Mm-hmm.
Many of these people were trained to fly aircraft. They were intending to cripple the entire Saudi oil output. That was nipped in the bud. You're quite right. They nipped this one in the bud. There are others, and they're waiting.
And my bottom line is that the U.S. invasion of Iraq has made the world less safe.
Oh, yes, there's no question about that. No, I propagated it. I'm as guilty as anybody else. I thought it was right because I'd been studying this situation for many years, and we know that Saddam Hussein had tried to develop the atom bomb. He had 20,000 people working. All this was uncovered by the United Nations. It's in the open domain. You can look it up on the web. He had huge weapons of mass destruction programs before. We made the mistake by thinking that he had them again.
Yes, indeed. Thank you very much. Al Javementer, a powerful book. I recommend it to my listeners. Allah's Bomb, The Islamic Quest for Nuclear Weapons. Nice to talk with you.
Nice to talk to you too, Peter.
All right. Take care. We'll do it again.
Well, maybe not. Take care.
Thanks for listening to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. We archive our programs at peterbcollins.com so you can listen later.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Did the White House know how a soldier died but keep it from the family?
There's one thing that the Tillman family would want, and that's the unvarnished truth.
And yet another try at a troop funding bill.
I'm optimistic we can get a bill, a good bill, and a bill that satisfies all our objectives, and that's to get the money to the troops as quickly as possible.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Cammie McCormick. What did the White House know in the early days after the death of football star Pat Tillman in Afghanistan? CBS News correspondent John Hartshew reports a House committee is pushing to find out.
In letters to the White House counsel and defense secretary, Oversight Committee Chairman Henry Waxman says the panel is looking into why the Tillman family and American public were misled. From the Pentagon, he seeks all documents relating to Tillman received or generated by several offices, including that of the Defense Secretary. The committee wants similar materials relating to how and when White House officials learned of the circumstances of Tillman's death in Afghanistan. California Congressman Mike Honda says the Tillman family doesn't know.
Who said what, when, and how high did it go?
A soldier fighting with Tillman says it was clear to them immediately that it was friendly fire. John Hartshew, CBS News, Washington.
Now this.
Giving your house a whole new look will put a smile on your face. So will saving money on it at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. From April 26th to the 30th, save 25% on our exceptional paints and stains. Save 15% on Duration Home and Duration Exterior Coatings. And save 25% on select wall coverings, too. So hurry in. Sale ends Monday, April 30th for painting and decorating. For locations, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply.
Our next life exercise, getting oversized carry-on luggage into overhead compartment. 4, 3, 2, 1. Hands on handle, feet together, lift up. Push. Swing hips to avoid boarding passengers. Swing left.
Excuse me.
Swing right.
Excuse me.
The flight attendant says there's no way your bag is going to fit. Push. Push.
Life is exercise. Snickers Marathon is energy. Great tasting, nutritious, long-lasting energy for the demands of your day. Grab a Snickers Marathon in the energy bar aisle.
President Bush wants to meet with lawmakers again to try to find a way around the impasse over a war funding bill. Here's CBS News correspondent Mark Noller.
Though neither side appears ready to compromise, President Bush has invited congressional leaders of both parties to a post-veto meeting on the war funding bill next Wednesday. He still needs agreement on a bill to fund U.S. troops in Iraq, but he says Democrats must move past their timetable for withdrawal.
So they want to try again. That which I've said was unacceptable, then of course I'll veto it, but I hope it doesn't come to that.
Speaking at Camp David, Mr. Bush actually said he's optimistic he'll get agreement on a good bill, which to him means no schedule for a pullout and no unrelated spending. Mark Noller, CBS News, the White House.
The Pentagon claims it has in custody a senior Al-Qaeda operative, a native Iraqi. David Martin reports was arrested along Iraq's border with Turkey months ago, but it says activities in Afghanistan that U.S. officials want to know more about.
He was known and trusted by Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda's number two man, Ayman al-Zawahiri, and it was in direct contact with both of them, and at one point was even Zawahiri's caretaker, and he also knew the other top Al-Qaeda leaders, including Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the mastermind of 9/11.
Abdul Hadi al-Iraqi was secretly held by the CIA for months before being sent to Guantanamo Bay. The Saudis claim they've arrested more than 170 people, some of whom may have received pilot training to stage 9/11-type attacks on oil facilities within the kingdom. Security expert Neil Livingston.
It would appear, given the fact that they were well-financed, that they had aviation skills, also explosive skills, that they were going to carry out some massive type of operation.
The Saudis aren't saying when those arrests began. Authorities in Blacksburg, Virginia, still struggling to come up with answers in the Virginia Tech massacre.
It's an effort by frustrated but determined police investigators to learn more about Virginia Tech gunman Sung Hee Jo. They've distributed a voluntary questionnaire to students in West Ambler Johnston dorm where Joe's rampage started. Police want to know who had interaction with him and who knew his first victim, freshman Emily Hilscher. Investigators are still hunting for any link between the two.
Correspondent Jim Krasula. In southeast Georgia, a wildfire has now burned more than 60,000 acres and chased hundreds of people from their homes.
This is the largest wildfire in Georgia history. We're working with federal agencies to make sure that people are safe. People do need to be aware of the smoke.
Susan Reich of the Georgia Forestry Commission. The fire is burning in the Okefenokee Swamp. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
The following is an OnStar conversation.
OnStar Center, this is Dolores. How may I assist you?
Somebody just stole my truck.
I'm sorry that happened to you. Have you called the police?
Police are standing right in my living room. Now, how does it work? Do you guys call the police and say you've located it?
Yes, and we will call you and let you know. I'm going to begin searching for your vehicle right now. Do you have the VIN number?
3G Light Golf N.
If your vehicle is stolen, OnStar can work with authorities to help them locate it.
This is Kelly.
Hello, this is Dolores with OnStar. I just wanted to let you know that we have located the vehicle.
That is awesome. OnStar rocks.
We appreciate you saying that. That's what that makes our day. It really
does. Thank you, Dolores.
You are quite welcome.
Stolen vehicle location assistance is just one of many OnStar services available on over 50 GM models. The first year of OnStar service is included on new OnStar-equipped GM vehicles. To experience OnStar, press your blue button or visit OnStar.com. OnStar by GM.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
We're rocking along on a Friday afternoon. I'm glad you've joined us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Coming up later this hour, something a little different. We're going to meet Leif Hillman. He is vice chair of the K-Rock tribe in California and Oregon. And they're taking some dugout canoes to Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting to see if the billionaire will help them blow up some of those dams on the Klamath that interfere with salmon spawning. It's an interesting story coming up later this hour. Check out the lyrics here, our music of the moment from Midnight Oil. And did I hear you say? Joining us now is a man who doesn't subscribe to that idea of my country, right or wrong. He's a hard-working journalist who was profiled with many others on Bill Moyer's special on public television the other night called Buying the War. He is Jonathan S. Landay. He's a senior national security correspondent for McClatchy Newspapers, which were known as Knight Ridder up until about a year ago. He formerly worked as the national security correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor and as the magazine's Balkans correspondent back in the 90s. And he also worked for UPI at their Belgrade Bureau, New Delhi, Foreign News Desk, and also worked in Hong Kong. And he joins us from Washington, where he stayed late at his desk to talk with us this evening. Jonathan Landay, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.
What did you think of the Bill Moyer special?
I thought it was devastating. I mean, I thought it was brilliant and devastating. Devastating in the sense that a lot of the clips from television that he played in, of sort of the cheerleaders of the war for the invasion of Iraq, I had never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps that's one reason why I guess I kind of didn't get infected and was able to do the work that we did.
Wait. Are you telling me you don't watch the cable shout shows?
No, I don't.
Wow. That's remarkable.
Even at home, you know, we've still got the rabbit ears on top of the television.
Oh, you lucky guy. So you're totally unfoxed.
Pretty much so.
Yeah, you get it at work.
Although I do have to say, you know, I'm an equal opportunity journalist, and I have gone on Fox before.
Oh, I don't object to that.
No.
I don't think there are some
genuine news people on Fox who do genuinely good news work, and those kind of people I don't mind appearing with.
Well, I haven't found that myself, but I'll take your word for it.
Okay.
I'm only saying that I believe that people of every stripe should go on Fox, because if only the people they agree with present information there, it simply makes it worse.
Or better.
Okay. I wanted to start off by asking you a question inspired by Donald Rumsfeld. With regard to the intelligence that was used to lead us into the war in Iraq, what remain as the known unknowns?
What remain today as the known unknown?
Right. We know that it's out there, but we don't know the specifics of the information. I'm thinking of the incomplete work of the Senate Intelligence Committee in particular.
Yeah, okay. I see where you're going. Yes, of course. The so-called Phase 2 investigation of the Senate Intelligence Committee, which is looking into not the flawed and bogus intelligence, but how the flawed and bogus intelligence was used by the administration, looking at the statements the administration used, the statements from the administration that were based on that intelligence, looking at publications, of which there were quite a few, from the administration that included this bogus intelligence, and looking at how it got into these statements and these publications and the speeches, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
That hasn't been completed. That's still going on. There's still a lot of unanswered questions, too, about the administration's public relations campaign, if for want of a better word, the campaign that they conducted to sell the war. Who put it together? How was it run? That kind of thing still hasn't been explained. I think there are a bunch of unexplained aspects of that that still need to be dug into. But let's not forget, the way this was run was very, very insulated. It was a very closed group of people who were involved in putting this together. And it was a closed group of loyalists, and that makes it all the more difficult to penetrate.
Mm-hmm. Well, we saw that in the Libby case, because I was interested in learning a lot more about the WIGs, the White House Iraq Group, because it's my thought that the whole Libby imbroglio, the outing of Valerie Plame, was a function in one way or another of that clandestine group that met in the vice president's office.
I'm not sure that the WIG was actually involved in the Libby case in the outing of Valerie Plame. I think the WIG's purpose was what has become known as strategic communications, and even people involved in strategic communications aren't quite sure what strategic communications is. But I mean, the way that it was conceived, it was sort of how do we coordinate policy with what we have to say. And that's more along the lines of what the WIG, I think, was involved with. What I was astounded by the Scooter Libby case was the vehemence with which the vice president's office went after her husband, Valerie Plame's husband, Joe Wilson, which raised questions in my mind is, what is it that they're so afraid of that Joe Wilson's his comments about what was going on, were they afraid might... What would they lead to?
Mm-hmm.
And that's something else that hasn't really been explored either.
Well, one of the things that reminded me of WIG, WHIG, White House Iraq Group, was the way that the Moyer special really showed the linkage between the stories that were planted in the New York Times and then the way the administration officials fanned out on the Sunday talk shows the very day that their planted story appeared in the New York Times, and then just kind of casually quoted the New York Times as the source, confirming the planted information that they were promoting.
Well, that actually went on quite a bit. The circular sourcing, as we called it, and it involved not just that kind of thing, where something would be planted in the New York Times, and then that would give them the ability to talk about very, very classified material in public without having to talk about their own, as they call it, sources and methods, but could cite the New York Times. But this was done in other places. For instance, there was a publication that was distributed to the world's diplomatic corps, the world's press, when the President of the United States appeared, I think it was September 10th, 2002, before the UN General Assembly to talk about Saddam Hussein. This publication was known as, and I'm probably going to get this wrong, but I think it was a decade of denial and deception, or a decade of deception and denial. But that publication contains material that cites the New York Times as the source of that material, but that material had actually come from Ahmed Chalabi and the Iraqi National Congress, and that material had actually been supplied to the administration as well through other channels. But by citing the New York Times stories in this publication, they were able to kind of give, I guess they thought they were giving it more credibility, this material.
Well, and I appreciated that Moyers included Jim Bamford's comments on that particular issue about the way all of that was kind of packaged and delivered by the Rendon Group, which was a contractor, I believe, to CIA. Maybe it was defense, but the Rendon Group essentially created the Iraqi National Congress.
That's correct. The Rendon Group created the Iraqi National Congress. They were hired by the CIA, and indeed, the CIA case officer who was handling the Iraqi National Congress eventually actually went to work for the Rendon Group after she left the CIA.
I didn't know that.
Yes, indeed.
Interesting. We're talking with Jonathan Landay. He is part of the McClatchy News Washington Bureau, and that, of course, used to be the Knight Ridder operation. They were highlighted in Bill Moyers' special, Buying the War, the other night. And I give you guys a lot of credit. I've been a fan of the Mercury News, which was a Knight Ridder paper until last year, and was the best enterprise publication in the Bay Area, and that Washington Bureau was a central part of that. And you guys really went at it up against the big boys who were often simply publishing packages supplied by the administration. And you did a lot of tough journalism in advance of our march into Iraq. And I just want to acknowledge that and add my gratitude to that.
I thank you very much. One of the things that I like to point out to people is that even though we were writing before the war, this project that we had embarked on before the war went on for another 3 years. And we produced a total of somewhere around about 80 stories, both on the pre-war intelligence, and we actually broke the story about the failure to plan properly for the war in Iraq, and their goal, which was actually to put Ahmed Chalabi, replace Saddam Hussein with Ahmed Chalabi.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the lead to the story, at least in one of the our former Knight Ridder papers, was they had a man and no plan.
Very well put. We're going to take a break and return and take some phone calls if you want to talk with Jonathan Landay. He's with us for another segment. Hey, Jonathan, just a quick question, a trick question I ask Washington-based correspondents. Did you see Stephen Colbert at the correspondents' dinner last year, and did you think he was funny?
I have to tell you, I did not. I don't attend the dinner. I have a bit of a, I guess, an ethical problem with, kind of socializing with my sources.
Okay. All right. You're off the hook on that one. We'll continue in just a moment, and we'll go to the phones at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You're in tune with the Peter B. Collins Show.
News, commentary, and your phone calls. If it's happening in America, it'll be right here on 540 AM Radio, KRXA.
Come on in, and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything's a taste you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a pillar affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus too. A side of couscous and a baba ghanoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery.
MPG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Hey everybody, happy Friday. Let's take a look at the very latest. Santa Cruz Mountains, we're going to start off there because that's where something's happening. Southbound 17 after Redwood Estates, a stalled motorhome is blocking the right lane. And as a result of this, traffic getting pretty backed up. So they needed an extra big rig tow truck to arrive on scene to deal with that stalled motorhome. Again, southbound 17 after Redwood Estates right lane is blocked. Big Sur, expect delays this coming Sunday on Highway 1. It's the Big Sur Marathon. It'll begin at 7 a.m. and ending in Rio. It's actually ending at Rio Road in Carmel. And due to closures and restrictions, Highway 1 drivers in both directions should expect delays of up to 2 hours. This support brought to you by PG&E. Right now, get up to a $50 rebate on a high-efficiency dishwasher. It's one of the many rebates. It's free. PG&E Smart Home Rebate Booklet. Order yours today at pg&e.com/smart. Smart Energy. That's traffic on KRXA AM 540.
Salmon run on the Klamath River in our next segment. And a group of Native Americans are going to the Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting to ask Warren Buffett, the billionaire, to take out 4 dams in the Klamath to enhance the salmon run. That's an interesting gambit. Also on today's program, still to come, Brad Friedman in his regular Friday slot. We're going to check in with Bob Petraeus in Ohio, taking a look at how Republican National Committee servers that have surfaced in the U.S. attorney scandal may have been part of efforts to turn the tide in the election of 2004. And also, attorney Paul Leto has some new information about the disputed election in California's District 50 last year that sent Brian Bilbray into the House of Representatives. We continue now with Jonathan Landay from Knight Ridder, formerly known as Knight Ridder, McClatchy Newspapers in Washington, D.C. He and his partner in crime, Warren Strobel, were featured in part on the Bill Moyers special, Buying the War, that aired on PBS this week. A lot of great information there about how we were sold this current war in Iraq, despite the efforts of great journalists like Landay and others to ferret out the truth. We're joined by Phil from Eureka. Hello, Phil. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show with Jonathan Landay.
Oh, great. I'm glad I waited. You know, the older I get, the more I realize how in many ways we're living in a fool's paradise in the United States, in a sense that if we don't understand what has happened in the world in the last 500, say 1,000 years, we're really suckered into the same script over and over again. To a great degree, buying the war or selling the war to the American public is another marketing thing like any other product. And, of course, you can see that in the exposure of the Rendon Group, how we pay people to market a system, market mm-hmm. a way people see things.
Yeah.
And it's also part of the way that we're used to being talked to after so many generations of people like myself who have grown up on television and radio and marketing of products and the hype that's involved. It becomes familiar. So you're almost a sucker for hype rather than someone who's going to give you a long explanation like Bill Moyers
mm-hmm.
going to explain it, because all of a sudden you say, well, wait a second, how come he can't say it in one, two sentences?
Yeah, because we're used to the idea that that girl in the beer commercial can be ours if we just drink that beer.
Right, right. And so we're a nation that's brought up on these sound bites, and so we have this illusion about ourselves in this country, which is really way off base. But nonetheless, these people who have an interest in making a lot of money understand how we respond to certain things. So they can market stuff to us in a certain way, such as, for example, you say the war in Iraq, although I've heard you say the invasion and occupation, which is a lot more accurate.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of folks use the word war, whether it's war on terror, war on drugs. The idea of war seems to give the public a knee-jerk positive response towards, let's go get them, let's go do it. We're not the kind of people who invade other countries. So the idea of talking about invasion and occupation is not the kind of soundbite that the marketeers would like to do.
Well, and I understand your point. Also, the war, the invasion of Iraq, was sold as a response to 9/11. And, Jonathan, that's where people like you got active and said, wait a minute.
That's true. And I also have to say one thing here in defense of the U.S. intelligence community, which got the weapons of mass destruction part of this thing so wrong. That part, they got right, and they got it right beginning the day after 9/11 and proceeding right through the administration's case for war. The administration wasn't interested in what the CIA was telling them about the fact that they did not have any evidence of cooperation, operational cooperation between Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein. Curious, however, whether the administration rejected that kind of thing from the CIA and other intelligence agencies. They fully embraced the CIA's and other intelligence agencies' judgments that there were weapons of mass destruction in Saddam's Iraq.
Wasn't that the word of the year, that weapons of mass destruction? That was a fantastic combination of words that really sold the war.
In a way, yeah. And in fact, I strived very, very, I was very, very, I worked very hard, assiduously, not to use that phrase in my writing, except, of course, where it appeared in quotations.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to talk about illegal weapons, illicit weapons, weapons banned by the UN, because we're not sure that a biological weapon can be a weapon of mass destruction.
And conversely,
when it's used in every circumstance, certainly it can. They can be weapons of mass destruction. But
and Jonathan, I appreciate your attention to that detail, because to me the flip side is that depleted uranium munitions, the shake and bake with white phosphorus, cluster bombs. I believe these are weapons of mass destruction, and we use them to take out a tyrant that we were accusing of threatening the world with WMD.
The point is that using the word weapons of mass destruction is a weapon. That's just that.
Well,
the American public bought it. That soundbite was a fantastic success.
Okay, Phil, I want to turn to Jonathan. Go ahead.
No, I would agree that it was part of the marketing campaign that was run by the White House. But it's not a term that the White House came up with. It's military jargon.
Yeah.
You know, the military has this need to shorten up and the terms that it uses, and those short either acronyms or terms that the military devises work their way into ordinary language. And we heard journalists using those terms during the invasion of Iraq. I was up in the north.
I got to stop us here, because we're OOT, out of time.
Okay.
Jonathan Landay, thanks for talking with us. Let's do it again. I really enjoyed it.
Anytime.
All right. Appreciate your work, and give your colleagues our best. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. We'll check out the Klamath River next.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
In these United States, you have many rights. You have the right to assemble. You have the right to free speech in a free speech zone. You have the right to an attorney. You have the right to a speedy trial. Well, not if you're in Guantanamo. You have the right to privacy. No, wait. No, no, the FBI can read your mail and listen to your phone calls. America, where are your rights? Join Billy Sunshine, and we'll find them for you.
The Billy Sunshine Show, right here on KRXA 540 AM, Sundays 3 to 5.
It's all about accountability. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. Both houses of Congress have now approved the extra money for Iraq, but there are strings attached. So many strings, to hear the Republicans describe it, that we'd end up with another Pinocchio in the Oval Office, although for slightly different reasons this time. But for the Democrats, it's all about accountability. They hammered away at that theme, pointing out the benchmarks in the bill are the president's own benchmarks, and the deadline for certifying progress by the end of September is something General Petraeus himself has mentioned.
We're going to make the assessment in early September. That's a commitment that Ambassador Crocker and I have made.
All the Democrats are asking for, as Nancy Pelosi never tires of saying, is accountability.
What the president doesn't like about the bill is that it has accountability, and the American people are calling for accountability. I hope that the president will heed their call.
Just be careful what you wish for, because sometimes the shoe switches feet. Keep in mind, there's a good chance that come 2008, a Democrat will be elected president. And that Democrat will be elected on a promise to get America out of Iraq. And that person will be held accountable, too. And if you're over 50, or a student of recent history, all of this may have a familiar ring.
In my campaign for the presidency, I pledged to end American involvement in this war. I am keeping that pledge. And I expect to be held accountable by the American people if I fail.
Now this.
Brenda Coates is a real GEICO customer, not a paid celebrity. So to help tell her story, we hired Mr. Burt Bacharach.
Last year, I was rear-ended by a GEICO customer.
I was hit in the rear.
First thought in my mind was about that funny lizard.
Lizard with X's eyeball.
I was so impressed with how they handled my claim, I switched.
I hope I'll never get hit in the rear again.
GEICO. Real service, real savings.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in Soquel Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive and Porter Street in Soquel.
The days of wine and roses.
12-step talk uncensored.
Laugh and run away.
Saturdays, 4 to 5 p.m.
Like a child.
12-step talk uncensored. It's about time.
Through a meadow line toward a closing.
From the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. And I just flipped that switch and the volume jumped. Sometimes I'm imagining that I'm actually in control of the technology here. Thank you. Thanks for dialing our way to the Peter B. Collins Show on great radio stations like 1340 KBBR in Coos Bay, Oregon, the mighty 1480 KGOE in Eureka, Arcata, Humboldt County, and our flagship station, KRXA 540, Monterey, Salinas, Santa Cruz, in that itty-bitty town called Freedom. Wherever you are, I'm glad you're listening. And our web stream is back up. We had some glitches a little bit earlier. I want to thank Hal for taking care of that. Joining us now is Leif Hillman. He is vice chair of the Karuk Tribal Council of the Karuk Tribe of California. And they have an interesting road trip plan to Omaha, Nebraska. Leif, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Have you had any fresh salmon recently?
Not much. No, actually not recently. Not since last year. We don't no longer have a spring run of Chinook salmon on the Klamath River that's viable.
Yeah. Well, I'm missing it, too. I really love salmon. I refuse to buy that farmed stuff because I know too much about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're working hard to try to help the Klamath River and the salmon run recover. And one of the things you'd like to see is the removal of four hydropower dams that are placed strategically on the river, two in Oregon and two just below the California border and just north of Yreka. And these dams, tell me what they do to the salmon run and why you'd like to see them removed.
Well, these dams are owned by a company named PacifiCorp, which is owned by the parent company, Mid-American Energy Holdings, which is a Berkshire Hathaway company.
So Warren Buffett's got it in his back pocket.
Mr. Buffett. But what they do to the salmon is they block over 350 miles of habitat. There are no ladders on the lowest dam.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially the river system is cut in two.
Mm-hmm. So that means that during spawning season they can't get past the first dam, the one in California closest to Yreka?
Yeah, that's correct. They run into a cement wall right there.
Mm-hmm. Now, are there fish ladders on the upper river dams?
There, on a couple of the other ones, there are above there are fish ladders, but they have no effect on the salmonid species in the river system, but they're intended to pass a red band trout.
I see. So basically, these dams have made it impossible for the salmon to go to their natural historical habitat for spawning.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And how long have these dams been in place, Leif?
The last one, the project was built over a series of years. The first one went in 1916. And when that one went in, there was concerns expressed by tribal folks in the basin at that time. And we were given assurances in 1916, the Klamath tribes in Oregon, specifically, were given assurances that they would continue to have access to salmon as they have a federally reserved right to fish for those salmon. And the company agreed to provide that passage and then subsequently reneged within a year.
Mm-hmm.
So salmon were effectively cut off from that portion at that time. And then the last one, which is the lowest one, is called Iron Gate Dam, and it went in 1962.
I see. So they've been there a while.
They've been there a while.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that these dams do really well, actually, is the Klamath River system is not a cold water system like you might imagine. Some systems where you have very large dams, very large reservoirs behind those dams, that's a source of cool water. In the Klamath, that's not the case. The Klamath is tends to be warmer naturally, and very high in nutrients. These dams are relatively small dams, and the reservoirs behind them are relatively shallow. And so what they do really well is they warm the water the already naturally warm water, they warm it even more. It's like a nice warm bathtub, and that creates perfect growing conditions for the toxic blue-green algae, which the Cutuk tribe, actually our water quality folks, discovered here over 2 years ago now. And so they create this algae bloom behind the reservoirs that actually can be seen by satellites from space.
Huh. And what impact does that have on fish species?
It has a huge negative impact on the water quality. And back in 2002, you know, we had 68,000 adult salmon die in the Klamath River in the estuary because of poor water quality conditions and being bottlenecked, not being able to come up the river because of lack of flow, and then the warm water conditions foster the rapid spread of disease.
Mm-hmm.
And we lost 68,000 fish, which is subsequently the reason why this last year we had 700 miles of coastline in California and Oregon closed to the commercial fishing fleet.
Right.
And that can be traced directly to that fish kill in 2002.
We're talking with Leif Hillman. He is vice chair of the tribal council. And what is the correct way to pronounce your tribe's name, Leif?
Cutuk.
Cutuk. It's spelled K-A-R-O-K.
K-A-R-U-K.
U-K. Okay, I had it as an O. Cutuk. Okay. Very good. So tell us a little bit about your plans. You've gotten some media attention. I've got a story up on my computer here from the Omaha World Herald. The San Francisco Chronicle gave you some ink today. And you're trying to get the attention of Warren Buffett because his company, Berkshire Hathaway, bought the company that has a subsidiary. This gets a little complicated. That controls these dams because they generate electrical power that reportedly feed electricity to about 70,000 homes in California and Oregon. So what is your hope in reaching out to Warren Buffett?
Well, we started this campaign back in about 2000 when the process for relicensing of these series of dams began. The license to operate these dams is issued by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and that licensing expired actually this year, and it actually began in the year 2000. It began a process of the relicensing process. We engaged at that time, and at that time the company was owned by a foreign subsidiary, foreign parent company, called Scottish Power. And after about 2 years of, the tribes in the basin worked very earnestly, spent a great deal of time and resources working with the company, trying to get our issues addressed in that process. And after 2 years, they filed their license application with FERC with no mention of fish passage, no mention of any of the issues, essentially, that the tribes had been working so diligently and had been assured by the company that our issues would be addressed. And after 2 years, we were double-crossed, and they filed their application with that called for no fish passage, improvement, basically a status quo application.
Do you have any sense of why they did that? I mean, I don't want to overgeneralize, but I consider Scots to be pretty straightforward and honest.
Yeah, well, ask any Scotsman.
Right, they'll tell you. I'm not a subject of the Queen, and you can count on that.
Exactly, and as a result, our response to that was we packed up and we went to Scotland to the shareholders' meeting. And we did that for 2 years in a row and managed to bring a fairly large contingent of tribal folks along with some of our allies in this fight, being the commercial fishermen, some of the environmental groups like Friends of the River.
Mm-hmm.
We took it on the road, went to Scotland. I spoke at the shareholders meeting in Scotland.
Did you run into Jack Abramoff and some congressmen playing golf while you were there?
I actually didn't. I'm not much of a golf player, but you know the impact of that was huge. It was huge in part because of what you just mentioned. The Scottish people were appalled that this company that is owned, it's called Scottish Power and is based in Scotland, that they would be a part of such ill treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, told us rather bluntly that, you know, that they don't allow companies, hydropower companies in their country to, they don't build dams or operate dams unless they have fish ladders on them, period.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't see why they shouldn't be allowed to do it in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And we believe that it was pressure brought on by our campaign that made Scottish Power not so attractive of an investment, seeing as how Scottish Power is, has a reputation of being a green energy company.
Mm-hmm.
We were able to generate enough bad publicity for them that instead of addressing the issue, they sold the company to MidAmerican. And so now it feels like we're starting over again for the last year now, since the company has transferred ownership to MidAmerican and Berkshire Hathaway.
Mm-hmm.
So
your next road trip isn't all the way to Scotland. You just have to get to Omaha.
Yeah, and so when we heard that that MidAmerican Berkshire was going to be the new owners of the dam of these dams on the Klamath River, we commenced doing what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this isn't a matter of a moral principle for us. It's a matter of survival of our people, of our culture, of our religion. You know, the Klamath Basin is home to, in the lower part of the river, you have the first, second, and third largest tribes in the state of California are all on the Klamath River. In Oregon, the Klamath tribes of Oregon are the largest tribe in the state of Oregon. These tribal nations along this river system, perhaps because of its, you know, relatively remote location, were actually the last indigenous people to experience European contact in this country. Unlike other tribal nations a little toward the midsection of the country or on the eastern seaboard, we haven't had the ill effects of several hundred of years of contact. For us, you know, the year was 1850, relatively short time ago. And so these tribes along the Klamath are relatively intact in terms of culture, religion, language, which is something that you don't experience in the rest of the country, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so it's not a moral principle that we do this for. It's the survival.
Not merely.
Survival.
A moral principle. I understand.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break and continue with Leif Hillman from the Karuk Tribe. Karuk Tribe of Northern California and Southern Oregon. We're talking about the salmon run along the Klamath River and their desire to remove these hydro dams. Warren Buffett's the man who could authorize it, and they're going to Omaha to talk to him. More coming up after a break here on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you have a question or comment, give us a call. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. You're listening to KRXA 540. Visit our website at krxa540.com.
In response to rising interest rates, Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage in Salinas offers the following advice to homeowners with variable rate loans. Don't panic or overreact. If you feel trapped in a frightening squeeze, first analyze your situation calmly, then take the best action available. There are so many types of loans, one is very likely to meet your particular needs. For a free consultation with Victor Munoz at Creative Mortgage, call 757-0436. Let Victor share with you the knowledge that he has built up over many years in the mortgage industry. Call Victor at 757-0436 today.
Please join us Monday nights at 10 p.m. for The Week in Politics with your host, Todd Hurlburt and T.C. Rafe. We'll cover presidential politics, see what's going on in Washington, D.C., and take a look at the local issues. And that taxi guy just might show up with an opinion or two. See you Monday at 10.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
We're still in place for that area as you approach the scene. And let's take a look at traffic here in the Monterey Carmel area. Let's tell you that we do have a problem working in Big Sur. Just regarding the coming event on Sunday, it's the Big Sur Marathon. It'll begin at 7 a.m. And by the way, it ends at Rio Road in Carmel. Now, due to lane closures and restrictions, it looks like Highway 1 drivers in both directions should expect delays of at least the 2 hours. So that's going to be a big deal coming up. Also want to mention that in Castroville, 156 between Castroville Boulevard and Oak Hills, you can expect delays on Monday of up to 20 to 30 minutes as Caltrans has one-way traffic control in effect for a 3-mile stretch of that roadway from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. And a quick look at Highway 17, no major stalls or accidents there.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host, Peter B. 9 minutes away from the hour, we're talking about the salmon run on the Klamath River and how things would be much more better if we could get some of those hydro dams that the salmon can't get past during spawning season removed from the Klamath River Basin. And to do that, members of the Karuk tribe and the Yurok and Hoopa tribes are planning to tow some hand-carved redwood canoes to Omaha. Did you consider floating down the Snake River, Leaf?
They don't connect.
Okay. There ought to be some way to do it by water. But next week is the annual meeting of Berkshire Hathaway. That's the holding company that Warren Buffett controls. And you're planning to show up there and ask them to remove these dams. Now, do you have standing for the Berkshire Hathaway meeting? In other words, do you have some shareholders who are going to authorize you to speak?
Yes, we've received proxies, shareholder proxies from, at this point, I think we have four proxies that shareholders have provided to us to give us that opportunity.
Because, Leaf, I was going to offer, I actually hold 2 shares in Berkshire Hathaway. I was diversifying my portfolio a few years ago, and the accountant recommended it. And so I do get their annual report, and I get the proxies, but it looks like you're covered. So I think that's a very smart way to go, because if you just show up as a spectator, they don't even have to talk to you. But as a shareholder, you have rights to speak.
That's right. And by apparently what I read, I'll have my chance to ask Mr. Buffett one question.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, good luck with that, and the world will be watching.
Yeah.
And I hope you are successful. I also want to direct people to the website omaha.com. There's a great article about this issue today with a much better map that shows that you're seeking removal of four out of about, six or seven dams on the river.
That's correct.
And so some would remain that could still generate power. Is that right?
You know, the two that would remain essentially are very small dams that were put in place to take the place of natural barriers that existed there. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of control structures.
Okay.
They're not so much generation.
Now, the other thing that I learned from this article, Leif, is that a couple of years ago, you were singled out by the sons of Warren Buffett for a special American Indian Leadership Award for your role in the campaign to get these dams removed.
Yeah, the Buffett boys have a wonderful foundation up in Portland, Oregon, called EcoTrust,
mm-hmm.
and they honor the work of indigenous leaders throughout what they like to call Salmon Nation,
mm-hmm.
for their role in preserving the salmon in the Pacific Northwest, and it was a great honor for me to be nominated for that award, and
you're going to bring your plaque along and remind them?
I don't know if I'll do that. it is interesting that what the Buffett boys are doing is a great service to the country and the mm-hmm. Indian nations and Salmon Nation for sure.
All right, let's take a couple of callers. Josh in Arcata, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Well, hello. Thanks so much for having me. I was just going to mention that the salmon is so much more. There are even some art projects that happened around up here on the North Coast that where the title was Salmon is Everything. And not only I'm so glad that there's some economic leverage happening, but what one thing to keep in mind and thanks so much. I appreciate your concern for proper pronunciation of the Yurok's. This is a spiritual animal. It is it's part of like coming of age rituals and for fathers and sons, and the same thing for women. It is it's a food, of course, source, but it's so much more than just an economic thing, and the fact that these cultures are still intact, there's something to be cherished there, so much more than economic, and so much more precious. We're realizing more and more around the world.
All right, Joshua, I appreciate that sentiment. Now to Joanna, just outside Eureka. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, Peter.
Hello.
I'm a great fan. I came to Blue Lake to see you.
Oh, I remember.
You're cute.
Oh.
I just came up here from SoCal a couple of years ago, but had the good fortune to have a man live with me, a friend of mine, for a while, who was trying to be a fisherman up here, and learned a lot about the Klamath River and the Indian rights. Nobody. I'm so thrilled you're dealing with this because nobody's talking about it. Our rivers are dry. Our rivers are not there anymore. There are no rights. What has it gone down to from like 8 months to 8 days or something for the fishermen up here?
Leif, give us an answer there.
Yes, that's correct. For the she's speaking of the commercial fishermen.
Mm-hmm. It's how many fishermen are there going broke? I mean, who have no life up here anymore? We have the lumber is going down the tubes. The fishing is going down the tubes. I mean, it's a bad enough for the Indians. So what about the other fishermen who are trying to make a living, who have made a living up here in the salmon industry?
Well, very good questions. Go ahead, Leif.
We stand in solidarity with our with our brothers, whether they be the commercial fishermen who were impacted this last year by being taken off the water, essentially, for 700 miles of coastline, but as well as the sport fishermen as well, in river, in the ocean as well, in the Klamath Zone.
Everybody throws
have been impacted here.
You fish them and then you throw them back.
Yeah, Joanne, thanks for your call. Leif, I'm just about out of time. Is there a website you want to direct people to support your efforts?
Folks can go to www.kaduk.us.
Mm-hmm.
And scroll down to campaigns.
All right, great.
And we'll have something up on there for folks.
Good luck in Omaha. Thanks for talking with us today.
I appreciate it very much.
Vote means that our investigation turned up nothing.
Because somebody testified lying before a grand jury doesn't mean he's involved.
It is flat out absurd. Bush was begging that governor on the Sunday before the hurricane hit to get people out of there and declare an emergency.
It's all crazy propaganda. The Joseph Goebbels Network.
Bush was on the phone with her. They were thinking about sending the military in because the state and local people weren't acting fast enough.
It is certain that some self-possessed judge somewhere will soon rule that three men are three women can rule. Yet Iraqis are united in a broad and deep conviction. 12 government ministries are currently under the direct control of Iraqis. I don't think that's too high a standard.
If you retire, you don't have anything to worry about. Probably say it three more times. See, in my line of work, you've got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in. You've got to catapult the propaganda.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Tom Foti. An alleged terror plot to strike at the heart of Saudi Arabia's economy, its oil fields. That is what Saudi officials say they have broken up just in time. From the CBS News Foreign Desk in London, correspondent Richard Roth.
The government said it arrested 172 militants and claimed some were planning suicide attacks, even training as pilots. The targets were military posts, prisons, public officials, and the country's precious resource, oil.
This is one of the largest mass arrests in Saudi Arabia since September 11th, when most of the hijacked terrorists came from there. The Pentagon says it has a major al-Qaeda figure in custody at Guantanamo Bay, Abdul al-Hadi al-Iraqi, suspected of plotting attacks on U.S. forces in Afghanistan from across the border in Pakistan. President Bush is willing to talk about the next step in the standoff with Congress over Iraq funding, but unwilling to give in on the deadlines Congress has just passed.
Looking beyond his promised veto of the war funding bill, President Bush says he'll negotiate with Democratic leaders to get a measure without a timetable for withdrawal from Iraq. But he served notice he won't change his stand.
If the Congress wants to test my will as to whether I'll accept a timetable withdrawal, I won't accept one. I just don't think it's in the interest of our troops.
But at a Camp David press conference with Japan's prime minister, Mr. Bush said he's optimistic a deal can be worked out to get funding to U.S. troops in Iraq. Mark Holder, CBS News, the White House.
And the White House says its indications are that President Bush did not know that former NFL star Pat Tillman was killed by fire from fellow U.S. soldiers until after Tillman's highly publicized funeral service. Just the same, the House Oversight Committee now wants documents from the White House and the Pentagon about what officials there knew and when, as it investigates the false picture painted at the time by the Defense Department. Committee member Congressman Mike Honda on San Francisco's KCBS radio.
I don't know why they would release those information. It was part of the investigation, and if that's part of the investigation, then we'd like to make that a part of our record in terms of the oversight hearings.
It has been a tough 11 days in southeast Georgia, where hundreds of firefighters have been trying to contain a blaze threatening homes in bone-dry weather. Reporter Pete Combs is there.
This fire is now burning 95 square miles of forest in and around the Okefenokee Swamp down by Waycross, Georgia. Some towns have been evacuated, then residents are allowed to come back, and then they're evacuated again. But there are 700 firefighters on the fire line right now, and they're getting tired as well. The big problem now is how to keep that fire at least contained, or at least partially contained, without exhausting these firefighters altogether.
The nation's economy grew ever so slightly the first quarter, about 1.3%. On Wall Street today, the Dow Jones Industrials up 15.5 points, Standard & Poor's 500 index down a hair. This is CBS News.
We wanted to move in 90 days, and that was our goal.
Selling a home can be a challenge.
I've been through this type of market before. I'm going to be there every step of the way to guide them through it.
Realtors I work with know the markets that they're in.
They know how to market it. They know how to sell it.
Interest rates are at historic lows, which means more buyers are in the market for a home like yours. Every market's different. Call a realtor today.
The market is always changing, and I'll always be ready for it.
Only realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
What if I told you buying a good used car just got a whole lot easier? And what if you could know the history, mileage, and price of that used car long before you even go to the dealership? Well, here's the answer. Simply go online and search Yahoo for Honda certified used cars. You'll see the current selection at the Honda dealers nearest you, along with the information you need to make an informed decision. Feels good to be in control, doesn't it? Okay, no more questions. Honda certified used cars. It may be used, but it's still a Honda.
Drug maker Merck gets a turndown on its request to market a new arthritis drug to replace one that has been banned.
Arcoxia was supposed to replace Vioxx, the controversial painkiller pulled from the market. Problem is, it has similar side effects. It also increases heart attack and stroke risks, the FDA says. There's suspicion, in fact, about this entire class of drugs called COX-2 inhibitors. At one time, they were thought to be the next arthritis wonder drugs.
Patients and physicians are frankly desperate for new therapies in arthritis.
Boston University medical professor David Felsen was on an FDA advisory panel that rejected this drug.
Arcoxia did not really represent an innovative new therapy.
Merck still sells it in 63 countries, but a potential $1 billion-a-year market here is gone. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
Trying to turn around the fortunes of General Motors CEO Chief Executive Rick Wagoner is cutting his own pay by a quarter to $1.65 million. Tom Foti, CBS News.
Giving your house a whole new look will put a smile on your face. So will saving money on it at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. From April 26th to the 30th, save 25% on our exceptional paints and stains. Save 15% on Duration Home and Duration Exterior Coatings. And save 25% on select wall coverings, too. So hurry in. Sale ends Monday, April 30th for painting and decorating. For locations, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply.
Our next life exercise, getting oversized carry-on luggage into overhead compartment. 4, 3, 2, 1. Hands on handle, feet together, lift up. Push. Swing hips to avoid boarding passengers. Swing left.
Excuse me.
Swing right.
Excuse me.
The flight attendant says there's no way your bag is going to fit. Push. Push.
Life is exercise. Snickers Marathon is energy. Great tasting, nutritious, long-lasting energy for the demands of your day. Grab a Snickers Marathon in the energy bar aisle.
Live from San Francisco, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Lively, informative, compelling, progressive talk radio. And it's interactive, too.
Oh, yeah?
Which is a fancy way of saying he takes your phone calls.
Oh, that's right.
Toll free at 1-888-5-PETER-B. Fasten your seatbelt and let's take a ride in Peter B.'s America.
And I'm not riding solo this hour. It's our weekly visit, the Bradcast, with Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com. And joining us this hour, we're going to hear some lively reporting from Columbus, Ohio, where the O is optional and honesty in elections has been optional for the last few years. Bob Petrakis will join us just a couple of minutes with some stunning developments there. And later this hour, election protection attorney Paul Latho will join us. He started a new organization. He wants to tell you about it. And he filed a new brief today in the struggle over last year's special election in California District 50 in San Diego that sent Brian Bilbray to the House over my personal objections.
This ain't no technological breakdown. Oh no, this is the road.
The road to hell is paved with electronic voting machines that say that the devil is number one. And there are no challenges to his electoral supremacy. Brad Friedman is the proprietor of BradBlog.com. He's sporting the classic green and yellow today. Hey, Brad.
Hey, Peter B. How are you, my friend?
I'm all right. And just before we went on the air, you broke some news to me. Why don't you share it with our listeners? A document dump late on Friday and another resignation from the Bush-Gonzalez Justice Department.
Yeah, very interesting one. McClatchy is reporting late tonight that a senior Justice Department official has resigned. Apparently, this guy's name is Robert E. Coughlin, and he was a deputy chief in the division which is overseeing the investigation of Jack Abramoff.
I see. Did he have, like, a golf card, a scorecard from Scotland?
From Scotland. That remains to be determined. In fact, he contends that he was not asked to resign. He's leaving because he's relocating to Texas, he says. And then he referred further questions to his friend Michael Horowitz, who happens to be a criminal defense attorney. So go figure.
All right.
Very strange. And apparently, McClatchy reports it's just as the Justice Department was opening an investigation into another lobbyist, Kevin Ring, who happens to be a longtime friend of Coughlin. So the wheels continue to come off. Shoes seem to be dropping, I'd say, about every 10 minutes at this point, Peter.
And Alberto is still at the helm?
Last I checked, he's still at the helm. Of course, I haven't checked for 2 or 3 minutes, so that could have changed by now.
Well, I had placed a wager at truemajority.org trying to win that year's supply of Ben & Jerry's ice cream, saying that 6 p.m. Eastern Friday today was when Gonzalez would announce his resignation. So well, I guess I'll just have to enter again.
Well, let's see. Is it when he announces his resignation or when he actually resigns?
I believe it's when he announces it.
Because apparently this Coughlin guy at Justice, they report that he stepped down effective April 6th.
Oh.
So for all you know, he might have, Gonzalez might have resigned 2 hours ago. You may not find out for a week or two.
Well, I'll buy the ice cream in the meantime.
Okay, good plan.
Joining us from Columbus, Ohio, where that O is optional, Bob Fitrakis, together with Steve Rosenfeld and Harvey Wasserman at freepress.org. They've been working on understanding what happened in Ohio in 2004. Bob, welcome back to the program.
Oh, glad to be back on.
Now, you've got some really stunning developments. Take a couple of minutes here, and Brad and I are going to sit back and listen. Tell us what you have discovered that connects the antics of election night 2004 in Ohio under the direction of Ken Blackwell, co-chair of the Bush-Cheney re-election campaign in Ohio, and some activity on those servers that has drawn your attention.
Well, what happened in part, a story developed in 2006 out of the Free Press office where a variety of tech people came in from around the nation to try to keep things honest. And while they were there, they were looking back into the 2004 election, the e-pluribus media people. And, they found this interesting web hosting firm, Smart Tech Corp, out of Chattanooga, Tennessee, in the old Pioneer Bank building in the basement, which appears to be sitting on 400 or so different websites, everything from the White House and the RNC to, voter banking vaults. And, one of their press release says they had access to real-time exit polling. And then it turns out that they also, were hosting the numbers for the Ohio election in 2004 on election eve and in 2006. And it's a large web hosting, well-integrated operation. And, of course, they're all partisans. GovTech Solution is there. Mike Connell, a great loyalist who developed a lot of the software for this apparatus and has his own company on record. I wouldn't be here today without the Bush family. That's a direct quote from him. And the Bush family, because the Bushes truly are about family, and I'm loyal to that network. And of course, the mandatory Christians come in from Cedarville University, 3,100 students strong, and go to Ken Blackwell's office on election eve and help him tally the votes. And the dean of the American Law School is there. And when everyone thought Bush had lost, Karen Hughes broke the news to him and sent his dad to bed, Blackwell was there, according to the dean, who's a friend of his and a supporter, frantically writing down numbers on precincts that they need to hit in these rural errors. Areas. And then, lo and behold, what we're supposed to believe is the greatest last-second surge in the history of politics, with born-again Christians racing to the polls and changing the outcome at the last second. Now, no local news accounts or people we've interviewed throughout these counties recall this surge, but now we know that they had the capacity either to do, and we don't know exactly what happened, they had the capacity in real time to know what the votes were, to know what the exit polls were, and to decide how many votes they needed from these counties to, in fact, pull this election off. And what we found over and over again, every time we've gone to these counties and looked, what we found is that the amount of people that signed in to vote in no way reflects the actual votes reported.
And it's always excess. The tally is in excess of the number of people who signed in at the precinct. And typically, at least I've always seen that any overvotes went in favor of Bush-Cheney.
Yeah, these are, you know, the low vote totals you'll find in the hardcore areas of Cleveland, you know, where you have a dozen or so precincts that are voting from 7% to 30% or under, along with strange vote totals for third-party candidates where they want you to believe that, you know, a right-wing, you know, white supremacist constitutional law candidate is getting 40% in the black areas.
Mm-hmm.
And then in these other areas, you know, you're getting these huge vote totals, many of them on election eve, which were well over 100%, 131% in Clyde, Ohio, precinct in Perry County at 124%, another at 120%, 98.55% in Concord Southwest in Miami, you know, 679 out of 689 people voted. When we went up there and counted, we only found 547 people actually voted.
Now, you also write, this was the case until shortly after midnight on Wednesday, November 5th, when for roughly 90 minutes, the Ohio election results reported on the Secretary of State's website were frozen. Shortly before 2 a.m. Eastern, election returns came in from a handful of the state's rural Republican enclaves, bumping Bush's numbers over the top. And this is in contrast to the exit polls that were clearly showing a Kerry victory.
Yeah, absolutely. You had first the problems with the reporting in the electronic system coming out of the exit polls. And then, really, you've got this 80 to 90-minute period where the reporting sort of freezes up. Thankfully, Jonathan Simon was and some people here on the local level in Ohio were PDFing, freezing, saving some of these screens. We did a book. I mean, one of my favorite was showing a whole group of Kerry votes, about 4,700 or so, disappeared in Lucas County. They were put in David Cobb's line, who, you know, got less than 100 votes in the whole state as a
Lucas County is Toledo, where
the
Noe family was running the elections.
His wife was the chair of the board.
Yeah, now he's in prison. Brad, you got a question?
Yeah, I do. Actually, I want to underscore. Hey, Bob, it's Brad Friedman.
To hear from you, Brad.
A couple of things just to underscore this list. This particular server, this Republican company, it was not just a Republican company that runs the RNC servers and everything else. These guys are about as far right as you can get.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the domain names that they support over there, that they carry over there, are things like liberalswantyourmoney.com, johncarryflipflop.com. I mean, just this, you know, incredible right-wing outfit, and it's just extraordinary that, frankly, Blackwell was doing business with them at all, but I guess we've come to expect that from Blackwell. The question that I have, I've been poking around this story a little bit and trying to learn more from the Secretary of State's office. Maybe you can tell us, the the server that we're talking about here that was being served by this right-wing company, ServTech, seems to be the web server as opposed to the election results server, if that makes sense, the difference between the two. Have you been able to yet sort of tie those two together? Do we know if, in fact, they were connected?
Well, this is the real-time server that's reporting to the world. So, a la Florida, right, if you can get John Ellis to come out and proclaim Bush the winner. This is the real-time server that everyone's seeing, right? It's not being hosted in Columbus, even though it says Secretary of State, it's being hosted out of Chattanooga.
Well, and it was being hosted out of Columbus until the night of November 3rd when it suddenly moved over.
Which is a very, very key point, is why exactly did they outsource it at the last second?
Yeah, Bob, Brad, we got to take a break. Hang on, both of you. We'll come right back. Bob Petrakis reporting in from Columbus, Ohio. Visit freepress.org to read more about it. And Brad Friedman's with us. Go to bradblog.com for the latest from Brad. More in a moment right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
is Stephanie Miller. You're listening to the station that encourages you to think for yourself. What a concept. AM 540 KRXA.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance. Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Hi, Ed Schultz here. Starting May 14th, The Ed Schultz Show moves to 9 a.m. to noon right here on KRXA 540. So join us for the best in talk radio, news, commentary, and your calls. If it's happening in America, it'll be on The Ed Schultz Show, 9 a.m. to noon, starting May 14th, right here on AM 540 KRXA.
All right, everybody, welcome to Friday, and let's try to give you some happy Friday traffic, because that's pretty much what we got. You've got a big event coming this week in Big Sur. You can expect delays. This coming Sunday on Highway 1Y, it's the Big Sur Marathon. It starts at 7 a.m. pretty early, and then it ends at Rio Road in Carmel. And due to these closures and restrictions, Highway 1 drivers in both directions should expect delays up to 2 hours. So give yourself plenty of extra time if you're going to be traveling in that area on Sunday. Meanwhile, let's look at Castroville, 156 between Castroville Boulevard and Oak Hills. You can expect delays on Monday of up to 20 to 30 minutes. Caltrans has one-way traffic control in effect on this three-mile stretch of roadway from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. through Thursday, April 3rd. And converting the roadway, this report is brought to you by Days Inn.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's our weekly visit with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. We're talking election protection, and we're taking a closer look at the election I think was stolen in my home state of Ohio back in 2004. Bob Petraeus, who was a candidate for governor in Ohio last year on the Green Party ticket and an activist that operates with others, freepress.org, is on the line from Columbus. And we continue with Brad Friedman, too, of course, of bradblog.com.
Bob, one of the items that you write about in this article, there was other evidence in the observable paper trail of padding the votes, including instances in Delaware County where in one precinct, 359 of the final punch card ballots contained no carry votes, which means the day's last voters were all Bush supporters. In another Delaware County precinct, Bush allegedly received the last 210 votes of the day. Now, that is at least circumstantial evidence of vote stuffing.
Well, you know, I think we've been all over the state. Wherever we've gone, nothing matches up. In Delaware County, their explanation was that the Boy Scouts had brought the ballots in when the precinct people, captains, brought them in, gave them to the Boy Scouts, and they gave them to a what they said was, quote, a mentally retarded chad scraper who was scraping the chads for them on this punch card system. We now know we actually had a request, and we now know that no such chad scraper existed. But they were hinting that the mentally retarded guy, who now appears to be fiction, had somehow screwed up or stuffed the ballots.
Interesting. Brad, go ahead.
Yeah, well, Delaware County was also, as I recall, the only county in the state that where they had a judge who denied the recount.
Correct.
That was brought by the Greens and the Libertarians, or at least he tried to.
Yes.
I don't know if he succeeded or not.
No, he they actually had to go to court to force a recount. And what's interesting, a man we like to call Honest Sam Hogsett, who works for ES&S, showed up there. He's reported in the paper in the control. The recount wasn't working, and then Sam got on the computer. And miraculously, in Delaware County and in Fairfield County, where he also went, the numbers all matched perfectly after Sam showed up, recommended by Ken Blackwell. Now, Sam likes to write letters to his local newspaper. He lives over by the West Virginia border. And a big fantasy of his is to shoot Robert Scheer in the head, to show Robert Scheer that it's he, Sam Hogsett, who killed him, not the gun.
I see. I'll have to warn Bob.
Man.
Bob Fitragas, give us one or two other key points from your research to date, and then we got a caller who wants to ask a question.
Well, you know, the key thing here is wherever you go in Ohio and you actually look at the poll books, the numbers that supposedly occurred there that put Bush over the top in those three key counties, Warren, where they called the bogus Homeland Security alert and diverted the ballots to a warehouse where I believe they stuffed them and one-punched them for Bush. Claremont, where the triad people showed up unannounced the day of the election and put in fixed the tabulators for them. And in Butler County, where they also had the tabulators tweaked on election day, is that none of these numbers match when you actually see the ballots. The other thing that we need to recall when we look at this is that we've proven phantom votes already. And in Miami County, essentially, there looked like there was a preset for carry at the county level, 32.93% on the last disc in two different machines. And it actually flipped about 2,500 votes, which we documented over to Bush, and that was admitted by county officials.
What are we going to do about this, Bob, just in 20 seconds or less?
Well, you know, I think there's going to be some startling breakthroughs. Number one, we really need to find out what was on those emails, because there's a famous Newsweek picture of Robe at Command Center with his laptop kind of manipulating things, and then later he kind of says, yeah, right, I stole the election on my laptop from the White House. And many of us thought, that's an odd confession, because that sure looks like what happened. So we need to know what the emails say. And the other thing is, there's going to be some real interesting revelations coming out, I believe, within the next few weeks in Ohio. That's going to be incredibly damning for the Bush people.
All right. We'll be watching freepress.org for that. Our caller dropped, but he had left his question. Why do you think the Democrats were able to win the Sherrod Brown Senate race and the governor's race in Ohio with Democratic candidates, and why weren't those rigged? Is it because Blackwell's out of the picture?
No. I think anyone who looks at that, and I think Brad has looked at this, there's actually more votes missing in 2006 than 2004, which correlates to the rise of these touchscreen machines. Sherrod Brown, in the last dispatch poll which is the gold standard in Ohio,
mm-hmm.
was up by 24 points. He wins by 12 points.
Mm.
Strickland's up by 36. He wins by 24. So if you go through the list, virtually every Democratic candidate is missing 10 to 12% of the vote. Now, what's interesting, if you look at the whole thing in a nutshell, is that the Republicans around when they were tweaking the machines, the technicians, were losing essentially by 7, 8% of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had this huge free fall that occurs primarily because of Foley's fondness for young Page,
mm-hmm.
and, of course, Ted Haggard's desire,
right.
you know, to be with young men.
Bob, I'm out of time. Thanks for your work. Freepress.org. Brad, stay with us. We'll continue in a moment on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
You got cooking. How's about cooking something up with me?
I'll tell you what I got cooking. Dinners Ready. I went to dinnersready.com, chose 8 gourmet dinners, made an appointment, and went to their storefront in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove and prepared the meals there myself. Now I'm cooking them in my own home.
What's that you say? Dinners Ready?
That's right, Dinner's Ready. It's the newest concept in home cooking. They do all the shopping and chopping, and I get all the credit. If you're too busy to go in and make your dinners, they'll even do it for you. So sign up at dinnersready.com, stop by and see them in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove, or give them a call at 645-9100. That's 645-9100. Dinner's Ready!
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Join broadcast journalist Glenn Brooks and native healer Cloud Pyler for an hour of Native Health Radio and discover how sacred medicine can save modern life. Honest, direct, funny, informative, it's programming that makes you think. Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. right here on KRXA 540 AM.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Late night at Election Central, Ken Blackwell's office.
Your construction smells of corruption. Manipulate, to recreate this air to go down saga, go under my karma.
It's our weekly election protection hour here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Brad Friedman continues with us from bradblog.com. And we're joined right now by election protection attorney Paul Lehto. He spells his name L-E-H-T-O. And we got another spelling issue for you because he's announced a new organization with a Greek name, CEPHOS, spelled P-S-E-P-H-O-S. Paul, welcome back to our program.
Thank you, Peter.
How you doing today?
I'm doing great. We had a great press conference, and it's been fun.
Now, you're in San Diego, scene of the crime, District 50, but it's also the scene of the Democratic State Convention.
Yeah, there's a ton of activists and Democrats and progressives and PDA folks, and, yeah, lots going on.
Great. Well, first of all, tell us about CEPHOS. What's your intention with this new organization?
Well, we want to, popularize and talk about what's, and keep our eyes on the prize, I guess, is really the key. And the prize in democracy is the people rule or the people judge. I guess we, the people, are in charge. You know, we're the masters, and that's why we call public servants, because they are there to serve. The Declaration of Independence says governments are instituted for what purpose? To secure us our rights, and for no other reason. They're there to serve. And yet they think they can, in elections, when the masters are deciding who they're going to give power to, the servants think they can hide information from their employers. You know, the secret vote counting,
mm-hmm.
stonewalling records requests, all that kind of stuff, electronic voting.
Mm-hmm.
It's absurd. Servants can never hide things legitimately from, their employers. And then, on top of that, even though we can't get any information about electronic voting, prior to certification, we got Brian Bilbray being sworn in 7 days after the election, in which there's still 68,500 uncounted votes, according to the congressional record. I mean, that's what Congress is thinking. 68,500, it was a little less than that, but that's what they're thinking. And then their claim is, because we swore in Brian Bilbray, no California court, no California citizen, no California voter can do anything. There's
mm-hmm.
no jurisdiction to recount, no jurisdiction to count, to audit, investigate, anything at all. And so what that means is that everything is secret up to certification because of the technology, and then if they swear somebody in, it's still secret. So they are arguing for two things: total secrecy of elections, and they're also arguing for election termination. That is, they can swear somebody in even before the first count is over, and that legally terminates the election in terms of anything in California
mm-hmm.
having any force and effect. So I don't think I'm really exaggerating when I say I can't think of a more important case involving democracy and on whether we, the people, are going to continue in any sense to be in charge of this country than the kind of issues that are presented by the incredible election terminating claims that are being made. I mean, if this is what they will do in public, then what would they do in secret?
Yeah. Now, Paul, I understand you made a fresh filing related to the Busby Bilbray contested election from last June, just today. Tell us about that.
Well, we appealed to the California Supreme Court in what's called a petition for review. The ruling of the Court of Appeals in March, in which they said they didn't decide against us, but what they said is because the 109th Congress had terminated that the whole thing was moot, meaning there's no live controversy, there's nothing left for them to decide because nobody can sit in Congress in the 109th Congress anymore. Well, the funny thing is that our suit never involved seeking an order to install Francine Busby and depose, you know, Brian Bilbray. That's the only thing, that's the one thing that the courts in California couldn't do. We were seeking to find out the truth of the elections. Mm-hmm. And through this petition for review, we think we're going to find out the truth of the elections no matter what, because either the Supreme Court is going to reverse and we're going to get our discovery and we're going to get a recount and find out the truth of the election as best as it can be found at this point, or we're going to find out the truth of our political system, because we'll find out that our court system will refuse to protect the absolutely most important and most sacred rights that you can possibly have in a democracy, and that is, from the Declaration of Independence, the right through an election to toss the rascals out. Mm-hmm. Because if they can swear them in and say there's no power in the courts, we have no right that is secured to toss the rascals out. And, you know, what does the Declaration of Independence say the number one job of government is to secure us our rights. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think there's a very, very clear-cut argument here that's emerging that I think people perhaps should consider adopting, and that is that in order to make sure that we are secure in our right to toss the rascals or, you know, out of office, mm-hmm. we have to secure our elections from the government. You know, in other words, they have to be immune, actually immune from even the possibility of government tampering, because when you've got rascals and you need to toss them out, the one thing we know about rascals is they cheat.
Yeah, don't forget thugs and bums. Brad, do you have a comment?
Yeah, well, Paul, hey, Paul, how are you?
Hey, good, Brad.
Yeah, one of the things that you've been very instrumental in certainly helping me understand is just the importance, then, of the need to get this right on election night. Because here we are, you're going to the California Supreme Court after this. So this was a June 6, 2006 election. It's still being fought. And meanwhile, up in Alameda County, we just had a favorable decision in a recount case from 2004, three-year-old case. And, you know, so what do we need to do here, Paul, to make sure we get this thing right on election night and don't have to rely on, you know, raising funds and, you know, court battles for years and years on end in order to get any sort of clarity in these cases?
Well, I think we have to do exactly what you just did, and that is to say that essentially the first count of the votes is the only thing that matters. Because, you know, of course you have a long shot, expensive, you know, you can, and in theory, I can make a lot of money litigating recount cases, trying to get audits and stuff like that. And I'm telling people, you know, that it is a total mistake to go down the road that leads to more employment for lawyers like me. That is a total disaster.
Well, then Paul, if I can cut in here, we have had discussions about the flaws in the Holt bill. And it appears that organizations like People for the American Way and Common Cause think they have a decent enough deal in the Holt bill that they can support it. I don't think it's good enough. And my bottom line is we can't trust the machines. And it's amazing to hear a Republican governor from Florida, Charlie Crist, saying we got to get these machines out of here. So bottom line, don't we really need to go back to the trustworthy process of hand-counted paper ballots?
Well, we do, not because, you know, paper as a technology, you know, is an old-fashioned technology, but it's actually the most advanced system of checks and balances that is available for publicly controlled and supervised elections. And that's the key here. What they did is if, when you toss out hand-counted paper ballots, you're tossing out the most advanced system for publicly controlled elections ever devised by humanity for democracy, and they're calling it, you know, trying to pretend like we're just throwing out an old-fashioned technology. The issue is not technology. The issue is democracy, and that's really important. If you're thinking about democracy, you'll never do these kinds of Holt bill things. If you're thinking about technology, it's very natural to come up with these kinds of things where you put all of your eggs in the post-election, you know, audit scheme that happens like a week or two after the election, in which you know, you're at best rolling the dice with the entire legitimacy of your democracy instead of getting it right on election night. I like that because it rhymes. But frankly, if it takes 1 or 2 days, that's fine too.
Yeah, I agree, Brent.
To be fair here, and of course, I'm the last person to want to defend the Holt bill. But in fact, it does not throw out hand counted paper ballots. It certainly does not encourage it, however, and worst of all, of course, it allows for these DRE touchscreen machines. Great video, by the way, just out today, a 30-second piece. I think it comes from the ACLU down in Florida, countallvotes.com, and really beautifully shows what happens with your electronic ballots when you walk into that ballot booth using these electronic voting machines.
I'll check that out, countallvotes.com.
Yeah.
All right. Paul, we're going to need to move along in a minute. Anything you want to add, or is there a website going to be set up for CFOS that people can visit?
Yeah, there is a website. It's already set up, and it's CFOS-US.org. So that's P-S-E-P-H-O-S-US.org. And the reason we chose such a difficult name is, I'll just say, CFOS is the Greek word for pebble, which is the original ballot. And the longer it takes you to learn that, the more you're thinking about ballots.
So. Okay.
Hey, Paul, are you going to be down at the convention all weekend long?
I'll be here tomorrow for sure. I don't know if I'm going to be around on Sunday.
All right. Well, I was hoping to be able to get down there. Wasn't able to, so I'm hoping you will raise twice as much hell in my absence, please.
Will do. Well, come on down. The water's warm.
Okay, Paul. Thanks for checking in today.
Thank you.
All right. That's Paul Lehto, L-E-H-T-O. And I'm going to spell out this new website, P-S-E-P-H-O-S, CFOS-US.org. And you can check that out. Brad, we got about 2 minutes till the next break. I wanted to give you an opportunity to update us on Tom Feeney in Florida. We talked to his opponent, Clint Curtis, last week, and I saw a couple of posts on the Brad blog this week.
Oh, yes, Tom, big Tom Feeney's in trouble, it looks like. It's finally coming to bear his trip to Scotland to play golf with Jack Abramoff. You recall he was the only congressman who was still in the House who hadn't been run out of a job in the wake of the Abramoff investigation, who went on that trip to play golf, and in fact apparently underreported the cost of the trip by about $15,000, and in fact had said it was paid for by a conservative advocacy group. He had no idea that Jack Abramoff himself actually paid for it. And now we've had some email that has emerged that shows that, in fact, it was Abramoff's office who told him exactly who was paying for it and how much they were going to all agree that this trip would cost, about $5,000, when, in fact, it cost about $20,000 a piece. So he's coming under the gun. His former chief of staff, who had been working for Mitt Romney, has now resigned. The chief of staff's wife is under investigation. She received $50,000 from Tom Feeney. It's a mess. I hope Clint Curtis has his Clint Curtis for Congress signs handy. He may need them for a special election.
Ooh, that'd be exciting. All right, well, let's run to our break, and when we return, we're going to spark up some blunts. And I'm talking about the Blunt family from Missouri. Some very interesting connections, and Brad is doing some excellent investigative work that ties the firing of the U.S. attorneys to some pals of Karl Rove's and the president out there in Missouri. We'll get the lowdown next. And if you have a question or comment, there's room for your call, maybe. 888-5-PETER-B is our toll-free number, 888-573-8372. Also, I want to acknowledge this weekend there's street action in many communities to support impeachment. I know there's an action in Humboldt, in Eureka tomorrow, and perhaps in the Central Coast area as well. So check your activist networks, and if you're so inclined, get out there and express yourself. The story is still being buried by the corporate media. Dennis Kucinich, who has put the bill of impeachment for Dick Cheney into the House Judiciary Committee, will join us next Tuesday on the Peter B. Collins Show.
News, commentary, and your phone calls. If it's happening in America, it'll be right here on 540 AM Radio, KRXA.
This is Frank Don. On Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. here on KRXA 540 a.m., join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour, a live call-in program to discuss astrology, the astrology of the world, and your own personal astrology. Let me answer your questions, and let me teach you how astrology can help you make better life choices. Here on KRXA 540 a.m. from 7 to 8 every Sunday evening, join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
How would you like to stop your taxes from paying for war? You can support the War Tax Option Act, which adds a checkbox to your tax form that stops your taxes from funding war. This frees up your tax money to pay for other vital programs that you care about. For more information, call 831-521-6042 or visit wartaxoption.org.
All right, this is our last chat before the evening. Let's take a look at the latest. Not a whole lot of activity going on, to be honest with you, folks. We're going to talk about the Big Sur Marathon on Sunday. On Highway 1, you can expect delays. Of course, the race starts at 7 a.m. and it begins, or actually begins in Big Sur, ends at Rio Road in Carmel. And you can, Highway 1 drivers can expect closures and restrictions. In fact, you can expect delays of up to 2 hours. So be advised, on Sunday, you need to really pay attention if you're traveling that area. Also, Castroville, 156 between Castroville Boulevard and Oak Hills, you can expect delays on Monday. 20 to 30 minutes, Caltrans has one-way traffic control in effect on this three-mile stretch of roadway from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., and this will be going on until May 3rd, so be advised. All right, the support brought to you by Days Inn. Gas prices won't help you travel this summer, but Days Inn Hotels will help you. Stay at a stay of Days Inn.
Time for more now on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's our weekly broadcast with Brad Friedman.
Tuesday in November, I took that stroll to cast my ballot at the local poll. Lines were long, but I didn't care. I had water, a hat, and my folding chair. Walked up to the booth, didn't say a word. Sure that my voice would be heard. I hit that button, my vote was sent. But now nobody knows exactly where it went. Fell off my boat, it isn't fair. I took a stand, doesn't anybody care?
Yeah, they lost my vote, and all I got was a T-shirt. From Ms. Buckstell there, who does that tune. We continue now with Brad Friedman. By the way, next Friday, Brad and I will not be here because I'm taking the day off, and we can't let Brad just cut loose on his own.
We can't?
No, because it would be too complicated. We have in the past, but next week we're going to play the best of Peter B. Collins, so I can sneak off to Palm Springs for a long weekend.
Nice.
And you get the day off too, Brad.
I'll take it.
I wanted to give you a chance here to lay out for our listeners the latest that you've been able to dig into related to this connection between the U.S. attorney sackings, the Rove emails that are missing, a guy named Thor Hearn, an attorney who's a big player in the Bush-Cheney election campaign, and McClatchy would be Groucho's magic word or secret word today. About an hour ago, we were talking with Jonathan Landay of the McClatchy Washington Bureau. He was featured in Bill Moyer's program, The Special Wednesday Night on PBS. You mentioned the McClatchy report about a new resignation from justice and some document dumps. McClatchy is also reporting today that there were a total of 12 U.S. attorneys on the list before it was cut down, and one of those was in
in Kansas City, Missouri, and that is Todd Graves. By the way, you're from St. Louis. Do you say Missouri or Missouri?
In St. Louis, we say Missouri. Outside of St. Louis, apparently they say Missouri.
Okay. I'm not from either, so I just try to blend in.
So you're allowed. Missouri is perfect.
Yeah, okay.
As a matter of fact, if it was the governor, Matt Blunt, apparently what the governors in St. Louis do, in Missouri do, is they say one when they're in town, one when they're out of town.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I understand. Yeah, well, we've got here, you've described sort of, well, actually, I think Josh Marshall at Talking Points Memo came up with the best phrase for it, a harmonic scandal convergence seems to be going on right now as all of these scandals continue to sort of merge together. And what we have in Missouri is the phony GOP voter fraud claim scandal meets the U.S. attorney scandal, meets the election fraud stuff that I've been reporting on, and Thor Hearn, and boy, I mean, this whole thing just comes together. To try to make it as simple as possible here, as we've been talking about the American Center for Voting Rights, this phony GOP group now for many years, I think, on the Peter P. Collins show, and they were the ones behind all of these Republican claims of voter fraud, which add up to absolutely nothing. There are virtually, I think, something like 20 cases of voter fraud have actually been successfully found in the past 4 years. And of those, many of them were just accidents where somebody was given a ballot, a voter registration form and told to fill it out. In one case, a guy was from Pakistan and he wasn't even a citizen. He was told by the Bureau of Motor Vehicles to fill out the form. He ended up being sent back to Pakistan after he did this in one of these voter fraud cases that are being brought by this Justice Department. In any case, Thor Hearn is the guy who's behind the American Center for Voting Rights, and he was the National General Counsel for Bush-Cheney 04. He's a very close friend of Karl Rove's, and in fact, in May of 2006, it seems that the Missouri Governor, Matt Blunt, who Hearn also works for, came under fire in a scandal that was that made its way into the media for basically this fee office license scam. And Thor Hearn's law firm, Lathrop Gage, was also said to be under investigation at the same time. That was May of 2006, and the prosecutor, the U.S. attorney looking into it, was Bud Cummins in Arkansas. In May of 2006, this story comes to light. In June, Bud Cummins is fired. He was actually one of the first ones to go in the matter. So, keeping up so far?
So far, yeah. I am reaching for the Aleve, but go ahead.
Yes, I know. Well, as it turns out, an attorney starts calling the U.S. prosecutor Bud Cummins about five different times to ask about the progress on the case, and the attorney was hired by Lathrop Gage. And as we have now learned, I haven't gotten a report yet on Brad Blog, but St. Louis Post-Dispatch has, that Thor Hearn was the one who went out and got this attorney to start bugging Cummins about the case. And guess what? The attorney was a big Bush attorney who worked for the Department of Justice. So this whole thing is turning in on itself, and it would seem that the firing of Bud Cummins very likely would have come at the behest or the complaints of Thor Hearn, who was so very close to not just Karl Rove, but George Bush and Dick Cheney. And as I say, this was really the first of the firings to come to light back there in Missouri. And I'll also add one other quick point, which is that the reason Bud Cummins from Arkansas was on the case in the first place was because the Missouri prosecutor, who you mentioned, Todd Graves, was himself embroiled in the same scandal. And his wife and brother-in-law were into this whole fee office scandal to the tune of some $3.6 million. So he was forced to recuse himself and eventually resigned himself. And there'll be more to come in the next week or so, I suspect, at Brad Blog on this, while I continue to dig. Did you get all of that?
I did. It's fascinating, and it just shows an incredible network of people
who's, you know, the unifying factor here is that they had a sense of self-righteousness. These are law enforcement officials, most of the people you described, and yet they choose only to enforce the law against their political opponents. And it's that kind of cronyism and violation of the trust of the American people that hopefully will be fully exposed. And clearly, there's a lot more to this story, Brad.
There is indeed. And you hit the nail on the head. These guys, it's a very small group. They all work together, whether it's at the Justice Department, at the White House, on the ground. It's a very small group of attorneys. You can look. They're all sort of hanging out there at this so-called Republican National Lawyers Association. You see them all kind of huddled together, and they're protecting each other and using the Justice Department apparatus to protect themselves from the crimes that they themselves are committing. Yeah. It is extraordinary.
Well, Brad, good work. We're going to keep posted at bradblog.com. You keep blogging, will you?
Thank you, my friend. I always will. Have a good weekend.
We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Yes, sir.
Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. I'm Peter B. Collins. This program produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill. Brian Urban is our associate producer today. Join us Monday for more on the Peter B. Collins Show. Have a great weekend.
Pacific Grove Liquors is the one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, spirits, and beers at very reasonable prices. Whether you seek the ideal California or imported wine, quality distilled spirits like top shelf tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and premium vodkas, PG Liquors is your beverage outlet. Love beer? PG Liquors boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales and lagers, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand your wine, beer, and liquor store.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
You know,
Show weekday mornings, 9 to 10 on KRXA 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Tom Foti. A former head of the CIA accuses Vice President Cheney and other administration officials of taking his words out of context to belatedly help justify a decision to go to war against Iraq. And he's been asked to say that on Capitol Hill. George Tenet makes the claim in a new book and on this Sunday, 60 Minutes broadcast on CBS.
Listening to the Vice President go on Meet the Press on the fifth year of 9/11, you know, and say, well, George Tenet said slam dunk, as if he needed me to say slam dunk to go to war with Iraq.
Correspondent Scott Pelley conducted hours of interviews with the ex-spy chief.
Tenet's explosive in this interview. Never done an interview before. His lips were sealed during the entire time he was at the CIA. He tells us the war in Iraq is what he calls a national tragedy, and he says that in his experience, no one in the administration ever asked whether we should go to war. It was always about when.
The White House disputes Tenet's characterization, but the House Oversight Committee, which is investigating the Bush administration on numerous fronts, is ready to add this to its list, with Chairman Henry Waxman asking Tenet to testify before his panel. As for the current congressional White House squabble over what to do about Iraq now,
I'm Mark Knoller at the White House, where President Bush has invited congressional leaders of both parties to meet with him next Wednesday. It's expected he will have cast his veto of the war funding bill by then and wants to be seen trying to hammer out a deal on a measure he can sign. By that he means a bill without any timeline for U.S. withdrawal from Iraq or billions of dollars in unrelated spending attached.
Saudi Arabia says it has prevented an al-Qaeda plot to attack its oil facilities and military bases. 172 suspects are under arrest. CBS News Homeland Security consultant Paul Kurtz says chances are there are more suspects the Saudis want to find.
We have to expect that there are other cells out there. As typical in the case of a terrorism investigation, you'll find that there are you only are seeing the top of the iceberg.
Meantime, the Pentagon says it is now holding an alleged major al-Qaeda leader at Guantanamo. His name is Abdul al-Hadi al-Iraqi, and he is believed to have been a major in Saddam Hussein's army. The Times of London reports on its website he is believed to have devised the plan for the suicide bombings in London and other terrorist plans.